This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Wednesday, a hump day. One more sleep till the Winnipeg Jets get back at it for real, and then they'll be real busy. In Pittsburgh tomorrow night, Columbus Friday, back here on Sunday to host the Pittsburgh Penguins once again, and then they'll be done with both the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Columbus Blue Jackets for the season. And the week gets continuing after that. Minnesota on Monday. Dallas on Thursday after the Sunday game. And then Montreal is here. Dallas again. A lot of seeing the same team twice within a week's span coming up. We'll talk about the Jets, their practice, and a lot of stuff on the National Hockey League today. We'll hear from the Blue Bombers. Justin Medlock basically saying the same thing my co-host said yesterday. It's a mental thing. We'll discuss that. World Series Game 1, Clayton Kershaw, Dodgers, take it. They're up 1-0. Ow. We'll talk about that. That was expected.
Suck it. Tell you, if your boy Verlander doesn't pull it off, your Astros might get swept, homie.
What are the Yankees doing right now? Huh? Can't handle the heat in L.A., Yankees. Didn't want to go. I don't want to talk about it.
Can you believe the complaining, crying, all the baseball people, media, crying about how hot it is? Shut up.
Well, did you see Clay Kershaw change his jersey, like, in October? He's just, like, soaked through his jersey. But, yes, I agree with you. I'd take the heat. I think we'll take the heat tomorrow, too. Two chances to qualify for Hockey Night in Vegas. Jared Clinton, Dennis Bayak going to join us, talk some hockey. Darren Bombing, some Blue Bombers, and Gus Katsaros, some hockey as well. An hour of your phone calls. Lots to get to. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rickey. Gentlemen, how are we? Did you watch Game 1? There's so much hockey on last night.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Going back and forth between the hockey and the baseball, and then, as I recall, I bounced back from hockey thinking I could catch like the seventh inning stretch, and whammo, I'd just see them hugging, see the 2 hours and 28 minutes, and I'm like, what the hell was that? How did it end so quick? Bouncing all over the place. I was mostly hooked on to Penguins and Oilers, and there were people complaining that that wasn't a national broadcast game, right?
And
I was
kind of
giggling because we got it, and yeah, like how do you make that mistake on not getting that sucker right across for everyone to watch? So that was a neat game. Who'd have thought, and who in the world would have thought Edmonton would be your lowest scores team in the NHL this year so far?
There are a lot of, I said it yesterday, was the day before, it's been a bizarre start to the season for many reasons.
Yeah, and you know, it was nice for once to watch a baseball game and not have to walk into work after just catching the ninth inning. What a novel concept that a game could take under 4.5 hours. It was so much fun watching it. I didn't even watch that much hockey last night.
4.5 hours. Yeah. You got exaggerated a little to me.
I'm not exaggerating because there was a couple games this postseason that didn't go into extras and were over 4 hours long.
Yeah, there was.
So it was just, you know, like that's the way baseball should be played. And I'll give Kershaw and Keuchel most of the credit because what did they do? Catch the ball, throw it right back. Like you don't need 30 seconds between pitches. That to me is always the main thing, is just get the ball. You know what you're going to do. Throw it right back to the catcher, and away we go. So that, I enjoyed that. And you know what also is weird? I found early in the hockey season, I've watched probably 90% of the Golden Knights hockey games.
Really?
Like, I don't know what it is, but I'm just kind of attracted to what's like it's like a firefly to a light outside.
You can sense greatness, bro.
Maybe that's what it is. It's some sort of spidey sense kicking in. But I've been watching a lot of Golden Knights games. Maybe more so when they're at home. I kind of go out of my way to check out what the atmosphere and what the games are like. And I'll tell you what, they're fast as hell. They skated the Blackhawks into the ice last night. So I kind of wonder how long this is going to go on. Like is this turning from a cute story into are these guys kind of mini legit now?
Well, did you guys see the Twitter battle going on between former NHLer Jeff O'Neill and columnist from The Athletic, James Myrtle?
No.
And then, what's his name, weighed in as well? O'Sullivan? now broadcasting in Toronto as well. It just basically Murdo was pointing out the reasons analytically that this is going right for the Vegas Knights, and Jeff O'Neill weighed in. He goes that their head coach, if you think their head coach gives one iota about that stuff, and they sort of went back and forth about that, and he said, and the clowns, Jeff O'Neill called them in Florida, got rid of this guy because they wanted to go the analytical way, and it didn't work out, and now this guy's in Vegas with an expansion roster and being 7-1. So it was just the debate I thought was funny that it even still continues, but it was going on between a couple ex-players and Mr. Myrtle, who we've had on this station several times. But it is interesting because watching the Chicago Blackhawks press media covering this, and it was their first trip to Vegas, and even the pregame, they were like, everything about this 25-minute pregame is just medieval. Everything medieval is part of this presentation. And then right away after, they would all tweet, and I kind of dig it. It's kind of cool what they're doing here in Vegas. We'll touch on that as well. Some of the teams that are red hot. Vancouver is coming off the road going 4-1 after shutting out Buffalo last night. Maybe Vancouver's better than we thought they were. This is The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you on a Wednesday. Lots to get to, and we'll start, as we usually do, with the Winnipeg Jets. Back at practice again yesterday. And the lines yesterday were Scheifele with Connor and Wheeler, Little with Ehlers and Laine, Kopp with Tanev and Matthias, and Hendricks with Lemieux, and then Armia, Patan, or Dano was all mixed in. Defense looked much the same, except for Dmitry Kulikov coming back into the fold. Morrissey, Trouba, Enstrom, Bufflin, Kulikov, Myers, Sherratt, Poolman. Lowry was not skating, and neither was Matthew Perreault. As Brandon just told you in SportsCenter, Lowry is expected to make the trip, but...
Are you freaking kidding me?
Questioning whether...
Third line's going to go Tanev, Kopp, Matthias, huh? Really?
Well, that's what they were practicing yesterday.
Wow.
I don't know what they're going to do, actually, to be honest with you.
Can you have a negative point production? Is there any way possibly in a cosmic sense to tap into that? It might transpire.
Back to our discussion yesterday. If Lowry does not play in these two games, Thursday, Friday, that's one less position they have to do something with somebody. But it still leaves two.
Tanev, Kopp, Matthias will be a jaw dropper if that's the third line for the upcoming game, man. Like that will push things to a new level for me to try and wrap my mind around coming to an understanding of what they're trying to accomplish or how they're planning on going about it.
So what would you do with this then? What would you do with Tanev, Kopp, Matthias, Lemieux, Hendricks, Armia, Patan, Dano?
Well, to me, I certainly wouldn't have Matthias and Tanev on the same line, and whatever Armia might be doing that, you know, had him the healthy scratch, and maybe you're a little bit perplexed with what he's doing. Like the cop, you know, you'd have to really try to convince me that something along the lines of cop, Armia, Patan, or cop, Armia, and give me whoever else on the wing is an exponentially better than you just cannot. There's no way you can have Tanev caught Matthias is a nightmare fourth line.
That's what I was going to go with it.
It's an impossibility as your third line, for the love of God.
That's the problem. Two fourth line. It's not a bottom six. It's a bottom three times two. Maybe some sort of miracle happens and they do find a way to get production out of their bottom six right now, but that's just flat out not good. It's just that's an ugly.
So
ugly
what would
line.
You do with it?
And who, I would put anybody, any other winger outside of Tanev and Matthias, I would put on the third line. Any other combination, you're just not going to get offense from that. I know they're handcuffed right now with Lowry and Perreault out, and I have no problem with Kopp being the third line center for the time being, but I look at Lemieux, Armia, Patan, Dano. I'll put any of those two. Give me any of those two on the third line, and I'll maybe be able to withstand that for a couple of games. But Tanev and Matthias, we've seen them. Like, we've seen them for 2 years now. Are you going to get offense out of those two? No. So I'd put them down to the fourth line and give them as few minutes as possible.
Well, the naysayers will say you're going to get some chances. People who counter that. Mathias, when he did play last year, he put up points for a third liner. He hasn't this year, but he's getting the chances.
He's being spoon-fed by Armia, and there was more opportunities missed by Mathias and Lowry when Armia was at his best feeding those guys, and they couldn't capitalize. That's what I remember the most from the third line last year. Let Armia breathe a little bit, though. Put him in there and let him get settled. That's crazy. If that's what they trot out there, that's going to be really quite shocking.
Well, they have to do something with two of them. So two of them have to go somewhere.
Yeah, I think they're picking the wrong two. I don't know. When I look at Tanev, Kopp, Mathias, that's your third line. Show me a third line in the NHL that's worse than that.
Mathias had 12 points and 8 goals last year in 45 games. I'm not sitting here defending him. I'm just trying to help figure it out. And he gets 2 scoring chances a night, and he can't bury him.
He probably won't with Tanev on the other side. Like, if it was Mathias, Kopp, or Mia, then, you know, that's something borderline acceptable. And especially if we have insight into the mind of Paul Maurice, where he likes Mathias and he likes Tanev. We know that. So, but having Tanev and Mathias together – on your third line specifically, that honestly seems like a joke.
Like, why not? Like, even if you want to go Lemieux, Hendricks, Armia, right, on the fourth line, why not just flip-flop the two wingers? Have Kopp, Lemieux, Armia, and Tanev, mm-hmm. Hendricks, Mathias.
Well, and I think that, and I don't know if this is the third or the fourth, but I would think that that's your penalty killers too right there. So that's your tandem of Mathias and Tanev are going to kill penalties in Pittsburgh and who knows in Columbus.
Which I guess is fine if you want to do that, but like I said, flip-flop them and play them less than Lemieux and Armia if that's the wingers you're going to go with. You just cannot convince me. There's no numbers to back it up that Tanev, Mathias would be more productive offensively than Lemieux and Armia.
So are Pretan and Dano the guys on the outside then? Are they the ones getting one can go down and Patan and one's getting waived?
Well, that's what we talked about yesterday, and that's the way things seem to be going, right? If you're trying to read between the lines and listen to Paul Maurice the way he speaks of different guys and the way he's playing them, you would have to lean that way. So Kulikov's good to go now as well, right?
Yeah, Kulikov was skating with Myers yesterday.
But I don't think he was ever on IR, was he? So, like, if he comes in, they don't have to necessarily make a move. It's Hendricks and Lowry are the two IR guys. So you would only have to make one move if Lowry's with the team,
and
but
Perreault
not
is
off
on IR.
IR
yeah. as well.
So you might be able to get away with just one guy, and then it comes down to, do you make the easy move with Patano where you don't lose anybody, or do you take a bit of a risk with Marco Dano?
I think they'll pick the easy one there. I think you have to. Yeah. You should, yeah.
Well, and what would you guys do? Like, who's impressed you enough to not, like, is Patan staying in your mind?
Well, it's not that anyone's really, like, no one's been overly impressive. I think Armia's getting the shaft, being sort of lumped in there with Patan and Dano, just because of the level of brilliance at times that we saw last year with them. I'd have a lot more patience with Armia. But, yeah, we've talked about this. It looks like Dano will be on the outside if necessary. And Patan, if you can send him down and be clean about it and not lose anybody else, you'd expect organizationally you're going to ultimately protect your assets in this when there's real no differential between in production from some of the guys that are down in this bottom group.
The Jets have historically protected their assets. They have not waived many people at all. And then it looks like Brendan Lemieux is hanging around, which adds to the whole somebody else has to go down then if he will be on that fourth line. Jets will practice again today, and we have Moose Hockey live from Chicago at 11 a.m., but the afternoon ride will have the latest from practice and, of course, our updates on SportsCenter will keep you updated on the lines and everything that's going on with them as well. More on the Jets, of course, and we'll get the thoughts on the Pittsburgh Penguins. But we'll start before we talk Jets-Pens. We'll get Oilers-Pens next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
21 minutes past the hour here on the Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Broadcasting live from the Royal Sports Studio here at TSN 1290. We're going to get into the Bombers and hear from Mr. Medlock. Maybe some O'Shea in the next hour as well. We'll delve into that Game 1 of the World Series. Game 2 is tonight, 7 o'clock, between the Dodgers and the Astros. And lots of hockey talk in the Royal Sports Power Hour, as well as your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas.
Rich Hill.
Rich Hill going down. Pittsburgh and Edmonton last night. Penguins take it 2-1 in overtime. Connor McDavid scores a goal for the first time since a hat trick in the season opener. First of all, we'll start with the discussion of why NBC would not move that to a national game.
Just dumb. Really weird, huh? Like, just
what did they show? Was it Vegas, Chicago?
It was somehow some idiots thought Red Wings Sabres would be a better national draw than Oilers Penguins.
Now, people, though, like, there's got to be more work, right? It's got to be something more complex issues than
well, there's contracts in once the schedule's made that you do have to put so many teams on. Like, the national game is much like the national games here in Canada, that once you commit to doing it, it's hard to change because you're now telling the local host broadcasters you're off that night. So to change it within 24 hours or a day or a morning of is – it's not like the National Football League where those broadcasts are going forward anyways, and if you're going to do a national one, they
– Do you think ultimately maybe in the – ultimately in the States, even though it's Connor McDavid, it's still the Oilers and you're down in –
No,
pick
see,
your place in North.
But it should be the National Hockey League. It shouldn't be whether it's in the States or whether it's in Buffalo. The National Hockey League should dictate – that it's not just the Oilers anymore. One of our biggest stars are here, and we're telling you that this is one of our biggest stars.
And this is the NHL's biggest problem for decades, is these idiots, and they are idiots. I'm sorry, you're an idiot if before the season you think Sabres-Red Wings is going to be a better draw to grab in viewers than, and it's not Oilers-Penguins, it's McDavid-Crosby. Mm-hmm. Like, get your heads out of your asses for once and look at this as individuals. Teams do not draw in viewers. It doesn't happen. People want to see McDavid Crosby. People want to see Doughty Carlson last night in Ottawa. Two of the best defensemen in hockey going head-to-head. I don't want to see Senators Kings. That is boring to me. Show me individuals, talent, and skill. But over and over again, it's the crest on the front, not the name on the back. That's garbage. And it's not drawing anyone, and it doesn't work. Yet they continually try and do this, and a large majority of the audience in the States last night got dropped out of seeing the two best players in hockey go head-to-head.
It's the old thinking, I agree with you, where going back to the original six, where it didn't matter which two teams were playing, it was exciting. And it still, into this day, like how many years have the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens been awful, but on a Saturday night at six, that's what you're getting because it's the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens. It's the teams rather than the individuals. Like, that's, I'll go back to, well, that's why Gretzky changed hockey by going to LA. It got away from maybe some slow, ugly Toronto Montreal games, and let's put an LA Kings game on TV late at night because Gretzky's there. Anyways, what'd you think of the game?
It was an okay game.
The whole battle of Crosby versus McDavid. And
that was a little bit understated. There's a couple times that Crosby took McDavid to school pretty good, I thought. And then the Oilers, though, they're missing a lot of opportunities up close for sure, where they're just sort of snake bit right now. And Matt Murray looks pretty solid. I thought he had a nice night. Cam Talbot as well at times, but just he, more or less what you would have hoped to see a little bit more of the whole Crosby-McDavid thing for the most part. But I thought it was really the old fella just sort of – there was one move specifically where he made a nice inside move on McDavid and used his positioning to maintain puck possession for the old one-handed backhand flip move that we see Crosby make every once in a while. But maybe a little bit disappointed because of a lack of oomph in offensive sort of situation. But, boy, the Oilers are really snake bit. And it was fun, as you guys are saying there. Every time those two guys are on the ice, there's just something magical about that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Oilers' problems are quite simple. They're not getting any contributions from anybody outside Connor McDavid. Like, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has to show up at some point. Ryan Strome was brought in for Jordan Eberle to maybe rekindle that 50-point campaign he had a few years ago, and he's done zippo. Milan Lucic is an iceberg, and again on that OT goal, he's caught way behind Phil Kessel and allows Kessel to come in all alone.
That is so much so, right? Like, would you say with the fact that he's got 6 years left, including this year, that is maybe the worst contract that exists.
It's up
right
there.
Now.
It's up there for sure. And that's what we talked about too with, you know, teams that are contending and getting close to the cap is you cannot really have many mishits when it comes to contracts. And maybe it would be like a $3 or $4 million a year deal, but when you have a 6 years left around $7 million, oh boy, the Oilers better hope for a lockout so they get one of those compliance buyouts and fix their roster that way.
And we talked about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins when Brian Little signed his extension, and I said if in 2 years he's your third-line center at that price, that's okay. And then we talked Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's making $6 million a year and just giving them nothing.
Just falling off the face of the earth, more or less, huh?
We'll talk some more hockey, NHL news and notes, and of course around the league coming up. Let's talk some Bombers. Justin Medlock spoke yesterday. Richie Hall spoke to the media as well, and he's not happy, or he's just as unhappy with the Bomber defense performance in Toronto as most fans are. We'll get into the Blue Bombers next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday right here on the Big Show, we'll showcase the Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon, including this Friday. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you in the first hour of the Big Show, broadcasting to you live from the Royal Sports Studio. Royal Sports Power Hour coming up next as well. We're also going to get into the World Series a little bit in detail in the next segment. Let's talk Bombers, gentlemen. BC's coming to town, of course, and the Bombers coming off that loss to Toronto. That really opens up the West with two games remaining in the regular season. Bombers now 11-5, 504 points, and 451 against. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on the Argos game.
We didn't play well enough, you know. I thought Toronto did a good job of controlling the ball and therefore controlling the clock. I thought early in the game we didn't bring enough physicality. You know, we were really high at the point of contact, and so they were getting extra yards that way. I thought there were some mistakes that were made in terms of our gap play, which led to some big runs. And then when we were right, you know, we limited them to a yard or two. And when we weren't right, you know, he gets 10. So some missed tackles, just, you know, sort of definitely not consistent, you know, inconsistent in terms of missing a gap on one play and then a missed tackle a couple plays later and then maybe missing a gap again and then a couple missed tackles. So I thought our offense did a decent job of answering, you know, some scores, and then I thought our defense settled in there and had some stops, but it wasn't enough. You know, we certainly Would have liked to get off the field a little more and give the ball back to the offense a little more.
Give the ball back to the offense a little bit more.
It's interesting there to hear me say and to hear him or detail or specify that they were too high at points in time defensively and therefore weren't able to make the plays. When you watch Sam Hurrell play, to me, and I feel bad in targeting him again, but to me that's one of the knocks on him when he's up near the line of scrimmage battling for space or to go make a play is that he's often quite high to me, and that's why he gets washed away so easily upon first contact and trying to shed blocks and such. So I wonder a little bit, and I think Mike O'Shea has referenced that in the past, so which is an interesting thing. If Sam Hurrell, like he's just some guys are a little bit, some players, guys or gals are a little bit more upright, and that makes, you know, your balance and all those sorts of things. Of course, if you're a little bit lower at the point of contact and that sort of thing, whether it's a tackle or an upcoming block, you're going to have a certain leverage aspect that makes you more difficult to deal with. So I wonder in part if he's somewhat referencing Sam Hurrell in that description.
Well, let's hear from defensive coordinator Richie Hall, who was not happy with his defense and their performance in Toronto against the Argos.
I thought it was an embarrassing effort that we had the other day. You know, explosion plays, long drives, you know, had opportunities to get off the field. You know, the thing about the long drives, it's not like they just take the ball and da-da-da. It's we had a chance to make plays and we didn't make plays. And if you don't make plays, they keep possession and they go down and, you know, they came out with points, you know. So and then we gave up some big plays. So I thought when you look at it, 556 yards total offense, I think that's pretty embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. And I don't know, you know, can you sift through anything that Coach Hall's saying there? And are there solutions within there? I'm not so sure that there are. This is very similar, and it's what stands out the very most for me last year defensively in a group that struggled in that playoff game against BC. Those final two drives for BC, the defense had to get that offense off the field, and they couldn't. And in watching them, because you knew the characteristics of the Bomber defense, it wasn't that you were praying for them to stop them on second down, because you knew that probably wasn't going to happen. It was more so you were praying for a turnover. You knew that if the Bomber defense is going to do something here to help pull them out of the fire, that it was going to be more based on creating a turnover than it was actually stopping the offense. And unfortunately right now it's the same sort of thing. They just can't get opposing offenses off the field unless the offense serves up a turnover or if the Bombers create a takeaway sort of thing, right? So it's nothing has changed with that, and unfortunately this is going to be the weak spot in a very glaring way for the Bombers the remainder of the season, and it will likely be exposed in a sizable way come playoff time.
And when the Argos went for it a number of times on
three
and it
times.
Wasn't three times, third and five.
Third and five, third and six, and third and two.
Yeah.
And they
all in field goal range.
And they missed one of those. And the only reason they missed one of those, and that was the one near the goal line, Ricky Ray missed two passes. Like the guys were open. He just
Well, there was one where it was a good sack, actually, like where they sent, I think it was Santos Knox, and they ended up losing about 10 yards on the play. But having said that, yeah, it's. It was interesting seeing Tressman be, of the mind of, we're okay here, we're going for there. Had to have some probabilities at play there. Huh?
So we've talked a lot about Richie Hall, but everything I've heard from Richie Hall this year is he's just as upset with his defense's performance as everybody else is. So it to me leads to the question of, is it the systems or is it a talent issue? Is there just not enough talent here?
There is no question whatsoever to me that this is a systems-based issue with Richie Hall. It's the same thing that got him chased out of Saskatchewan. There's all kinds of frustration with a sort of a passivity that was within that defense where they wanted to go at opposing quarterbacks and just disrupt more, and Richie Hall just wasn't doing it. And that's what got him chased out of Saskatchewan. And it's the same thing here. You know, even when they're bringing people, they're easily you'll see teams deal with it easily, and things aren't hidden enough or exotic enough, and dropping another player, like bringing guys, dropping others in coverage, all the rest of it. And then also what the DBs are doing in that sort of soft zone that you see far too often with the Bombers being played. It's a combination of things, but it is systems-based. There is no doubt about that whatsoever.
So you think if a new system and a new coach came in here, this defense would be much better?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
I don't even think it's close, really. I mean, and look, the Bombers made some big time defensive acquisitions last offseason, and notably on the D line, right, with Euclid Cummings coming in.
People were thrilled about the D line last year and the prospects of how dominant it could be.
And
well, they did. They're better. Like, they have gotten to some quarterbacks at the start of the year.
Euclid Cummings, Keisholian, people were excited for last year's D line.
And what happened with Cummings? He had a very, very down year. What did he do this year? He goes to Edmonton. He's arguably their best defensive lineman.
Yeah.
So there's been too many players that have come in that are talented, and they're just not fitting into the system, and they're just not performing up to where they need to be. This reminds me a lot of the Jets penalty kill. I think the Bombers have enough talent defensively. They've got enough players, but you just watch what goes on out there, and it's just passivity is the name of the game here. Like, there needs to be a boatload more of aggression in terms of getting to the quarterback, and not only that, but in coverage too. It feels like the DBs are just sitting back and allowing so much cushion that I don't know. I don't even know if these guys are getting a great chance at showcasing how talented they are, because it just feels like they're giving away 5-6 yards every single route, and it's making life on the quarterbacks extremely easy.
Well, the reason I bring that up is just because, like, even with Maurice Leggett in the lineup and everything else, it just this team gives up a ton of yardage and a ton of big plays compared to other defenses, like 4 to 5 a game up until 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then last week too. Like, and I think you bring up a very valid point with Tressman. Like, Tressman is a guy that loves to spread the ball around and rarely takes a risk, and he gambled 3 times, like you said, on third down. He rode James Wilder Jr. all the time, which is not his MO as a coach at all. He loves to make sure everybody's involved in the offense. He's a quarterback guru, so he likes to spread the ball around. He didn't do that much against Toronto. And credit to him. Like, that's good coaching in my mind. You can have your philosophy, but you go with what wins you the game. And
it's a glaring weakness right now for the Bombers, and everyone knows it. It's going to be what creates the most separation if the Bombers win their first playoff game and go to Calgary. That's why it basically is going to take a miracle to do something, because you've got the defense of Calgary, which is phenomenal, and the weakest link of the Bomber team right now is that defense. And that's it puts so much weight and responsibility on the offense to click, who's number one in the CFL for points per game at 31.5, it puts so much responsibility on the offense to stay on the field and to carry the weight, put up all kinds of points, and for the special teams basically to be perfect. Those two things have to happen, and you pray. All you can do here is pray that the Bomber defense create 2, 3, 4 turnovers. If they don't, they're going to surrender a boatload of yards, and with a boatload of yards typically come points.
Big show with Jim Tilth, Troy Westman, Brandon Rewicki talking Bombers on TSN 1290, 45 minutes past the hour. So let's go to Justin Medlock. And as Troy Westman pointed out yesterday and Monday when we were discussing it, it's a mental thing. Here is Justin Medlock talking to the media yesterday on if his struggles are mental or technical.
I don't think it's technical. But I don't know, you could say it could be mental a little bit. I don't know. I was definitely ready to go make that kick, so I definitely was proud of that. I had the right mindset. It was good.
And here's Justin Medlock on his performance so far this year.
It's been kind of laughable, in my opinion. So, but there's also been some really good things, right? I'm not going out there hitting 18-yard field goals. So, you know, we came out there, we made a 52-yard field goal after a miss, and I bounced back and hit a great ball and came back, hit the next ball. Bouncing back, things are going pretty good. Just, you know, you want to make those kicks. That's what I pride myself in, is to make those kicks. And I've done a pretty good job in those in the last few years. And unfortunately, that was just one that was, in my opinion, that I needed to make, I can make. And it was just something. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, if he's saying it's, it just dismisses the technical thing right away, and I'd agree with that for sure. And then the mental thing, if it is mental, then he's got to overcome that, right? And the thing is, it's just like when you're golfing, where you're standing over your ball, and what's floating around in your mind as you're standing over your ball, right? Like, how confident are you? And how real? Because really, and it's so neat, right? As an athlete, you're naked there from a confidence standpoint. Just let's stay in the golf world. When you're over your ball, most of us have probably golfed. If you're not a good golfer like myself, you're pushing. Like, it's almost like you're a wrestling match mentally, right? You're pushing all these negative, don't yank it, don't slice it, keep your head, all these sorts of things. And you're trying to find that cozy, comfortable, confident space in your head. And certainly it's not like that for Justin Medlock at this point in time. But once struggle creeps into your game and you have adversity or you're dealing with failure, there'll be one or two negative thoughts that creep into what's normally a very safe and secure place that is only confident and bulletproof. And you look at the way he was operating last year, he would not ever be dealing with any negative thought ever in his head. Right now, when you're 7 of your last 13, and that includes missing a game winner from a very makeable range of 39 yards, now there's something there. And so it's a little thing. You know, it's not a catastrophic thing here, but it's there is a form of adversity here that Justin Medlock needs to tune it back in and get real ready for the playoffs.
We'll take a break and get your thoughts on the Bombers at 9 o'clock and Justin Medlock, and we'll also talk to Darren Bomine at 8 o'clock. But up next, we got to stay positive in Houston as well. Stay positive. Turn this thing around. We'll talk World Series when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. The Royal Sports Power Hour is right around the corner. Hockey News' is Jared Clinton going to start it off for us. Gentlemen, we're having a little fun with Game 1 of the World Series, but I think it went as most people thought it would go. Clayton Kershaw gets the win. Mr. Keuchel gets the loss. Jansen comes in for the save. Chris Taylor leads off the game. The first pitch he faced from Keuchel in the bottom of the first, he goes yard. Bregman ties it later on in the game off Kershaw, and then Turner off Keuchel as well with a two-run bomb. Keuchel's only walk came when Turner hit the two-run bomb of the game. Your thoughts on game one?
I think for the most part, like you said, JT, people, when you've got Keuchel and Kershaw going at it, even though it's hot and everyone's saying how the ball's going to fly, you just expect and you kind of hope. I know a lot of people like off the home runs and all the rest of it, but man, and especially come playoff time with the intensity of every single hit and at-bat and pitch, I love watching these kind of duels, man, where you got a couple of kings out in the mound like that and you kind of stop breathing just before they chuck it, and I love it. So it was, somewhat cheering for the Dodgers, but really don't care a whole lot who wins. But it was neat to watch. I love the story for Kershaw, sort of in the process. I told Wicks yesterday I thought that he'll be the World Series MVP. If it goes to five games, he'll have a chance at that. But it's cool. He's kind of redefining or at least shifting his whole perception or the narrative of his postseason type play. And then of course you got some of the stories with the Dodgers and Turner specifically, being compared to, was it Garrick and Ruth with his on base percentage and all that sort of stuff. So just real cool stuff, and the storyline continues. But I'm really intrigued by tonight, boys. If Verlander gets chased off the mound, or if the Astros drop this one, you'd be like incredibly concerned, right?
Well, it depends who the Dodgers are. Like, other than Kershaw and maybe Hill, like, I think the Astros lineup can get to Hill. I'm not sold on their starting pitching. But after Keuchel and Verlander, I'm not sold on the Dodger or the Astros starting pitching. But I believe in Chris Morton. I think I've been watching him all season. I think this guy can give you five or six innings. So to me, it comes down to I thought the game went exactly as planned. Even though Keuchel and Kershaw are both Cy Young winners, Kershaw is still the better pitcher. I didn't think there'd be a lot of scoring in this. Kershaw was 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 home run, 11 strikeouts. Keuchel, I thought, would give up 5 to 6 hits. He gave up 6, gave up 3 earned runs, 2 bombs, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. So as this series wears on, to me, it's about the bats. Like, if there was a concern as an Astros fan, it's how Carlos Correa had no clue on those 3 pitches from Kershaw. And, you know, I thought Altuve had some good at-bats but didn't produce much. I still believe in the Astros lineup against starting pitching other than Kershaw for the Dodgers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for sure against Rich Hill, you would think, right? I mean, Yu Darvish might be a different kind of beast that you face in Game 3, but to me, there's no doubt if the Astros want to compete in this series, they have to take Game 2. They just have to, because you're going to be underdogs. I know you'll be back at home, but it will be Yu Darvish on the hill against, I would assume, Charlie Morton as well. So, I mean, the game went as how I think everybody kind of thought it would. And when Kershaw's on, I love watching batters after they look at strike 3. Mm-hmm. And I think Correa was the one you were talking about there, where it's the curveball that starts up at his head and then somehow dips back into the zone and just kind of all right, and walks back to the dugout thinking, oh, yeah, he's the best.
And it's because of that, like then was it Springer who got 3 in a row? Like 3 pitches all in the zone, but the curve ended up going right over the plate. I like watching Kershaw pitch. I really do.
The thing I think is going to be neat tonight is the Astros want Verlander to go 7, 8, 9. And I think with Roberts and the Dodgers, they're just 5. Thinking he'll 4, 5, and then you go into the bullpen, right, and hope that they keep it clean.
And Kershaw had 84 pitches, but it's a series, and you're like, save it for game 5. He literally could have kept going, but you have such a good bullpen. Like, you're just going, it's a series, we're going to need you in for game 5. The positive for the Astros pitching, I thought, was Davinsky coming in. He got lit up twice in the playoffs already, and he'd been one of their, he'd get 2 or 3 innings out of him. So to see him come around, I think it's going to be a good series. I thought game 1 went as expected. And hey, I really love seeing Sandy Koufax out there. I love seeing Jackie Robinson's widow and all the Dodger history that was around there, too. So game 2 is tonight at 7. We'll talk some hockey next. Jared Clinton from the Hockey News on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290 with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki, broadcasting to you live from the Royal Sports Studio here on Pembina Highway. We have lots to get to in the Royal Sports Power Hour, of course. NHL news and notes. Dennis Bayak, the face of the Jets on TSN 3, and of course one of the main voices here on TSN 1290, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He's been watching what the Jets are working on at practice this week, with so many practices before their next game tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. They'll board a plane after practice today. We'll get the details from Dennis coming up. Your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, as November 6th is our fifth and final grand prize draw. And, of course, our next segment right now with Jared Clinton from the Hockey News. And this segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. Jared, how are you today?
Not too bad, myself.
Good, thank you. Good piece on your Twitter handle, by the way, if you want to follow Jared. I recommend it at THN Jared Clinton on Twitter, on Patrick Eaves and what he's battling. Just give us the details on this and how it came about and really potentially saving his life.
Yeah, right now he's battling Guillain-Barré syndrome, and you know what, the cause of it in most cases is really unknown. And I spoke with Serge Paillé last night or yesterday, and some people may not remember the name, but he spent a few seasons in the NHL. He kind of bounced around between the Panthers and the Senators. And Serge, back in his junior days with Kitchener, you know, he battled the same syndrome. And, you know, it's a rare disorder where your nervous, where your immune system starts to attack your nervous system. So, you know, you can suffer nerve damage and your muscles kind of shut down on you a little bit. And, it can kind of come out of nowhere, you know, in Serge's case, and he made clear to me that, you know, it's not the same for everybody, and his symptoms were a little bit more rare, but Just to kind of explain a little bit what it is, you know, in Serge's case, he woke up, you know, lethargic. He could barely get out of bed. And when he finally did, he was able to play a game. And then the next day, he couldn't move. You know, he needed to be kind of helped around. It took about 10 days for him to actually get the diagnosis. And you know, once that happened, he spent a significant amount of time in hospital. You know, he had to wait and allow his, you know, nervous system to recover. And his immune system was weakened too. So, you know, he was stricken with mono during his recovery. So, you know, when it comes to Eves, I think we're looking at a guy who is probably going to be out for quite a bit of time now. And, you know, it's just really unfortunate that something like this would happen to him just when he's coming off of such a great year in his career. And you hope he makes a full recovery because, you know, Serge was saying it's common for people who have the disorder to make full recoveries, but, you know, there's always a chance that that it wasn't caught early enough and that he may have suffered nerve damage. So we hope he makes a full recovery and gets back as soon as possible.
Jared, how surprised are you by what we're witnessing right now and the level of struggle with Edmonton?
Yeah, it's hard to believe, right? When we picked the Oilers to make the Stanley Cup final at the start of the year, I think we were thinking this is a team that was going to only get better, only build off the success they had in the postseason. But that's been far from the case. It seems whether it's the pressure or it's just, you know, unlucky breaks, these Oilers just haven't been able to get on track. And you don't expect it to last all season. You expect a breakthrough at some point, but you got to start wondering where the issues lie for this team. And I think part of it a little bit is, you know, defensively, they're still not as sound as you would hope they are. I think offensively, they have all the tools they need. And I think any team with Connor McDavid, you can't really ever say that they don't have the offense they need. But I think defensively, there's still some holes to fill. Obviously, the loss of Andre Sekera hurts. And that was something that we knew was going to hurt the team. But I think they could really use some additional help on that back end right now because, you know, you can't outscore everyone every single night, and I don't think the Oilers are in a position right now to really challenge for, you know, a division title or really a deep playoff run with the way they're playing. And unless they get that blue line sorted out, I think we're going to see this for a little while longer. I don't think we're looking at a team that's going to fall out of the playoff race. There's just too much talent in Edmonton for that to be the case, but it might take a while for this to get sorted, and, you know, you hope it doesn't take until Sekera gets back for things to get on track for the Oilers.
As surprising as the Oilers have been, and not surprising, at least to me anyways, is the struggles that Montreal's going through. But you got a great piece on out for the Hockey News saying that it's as bad as it's been, it's not as bad as people think.
Yeah, and I think we saw a little bit of that last night. You know, the offense finally came alive a little bit, and they poured it on, 42 shots last night. So you see a team that maybe they're not scoring, but this is kind of the same thing, you know. I wrote that it's a little bit like a Groundhog Day for Claude Julien right now because last year in Boston, you know, the Bruins were tremendous at controlling possession, tremendous at getting shots on goal, and tremendous at suppressing shots, too. You know, they were very good. You know, all their underlying numbers said positive things about the Bruins. And we're seeing the exact same thing with the Canadiens right now, and the same issue is plaguing the team, which is, you know, an unsustainably low shooting percentage. And eventually these things do tend to even out. You know, you can make the shot quality argument about the Canadiens, and there's certainly some of that at play. But with the sheer volume of pucks they're putting on net, eventually, you know, the dam was going to break, and they're going to start scoring some goals. And I think we saw that last night, and I think we'll see it a little bit going forward. I think one of the concerns that maybe hasn't been talked about enough is that Carey Price has kind of struggled uncharacteristically. But still, it's Carey Price. And I think, you know, as the season wears on, he's a guy who's going to kind of settle in and he's going to be sheltered well enough behind that defense that he'll start picking up some wins and he'll start winning some games.
Jared, how do you see the John Tavares situation playing out?
Yeah, you know, I think the big thing is the arena. You know, people talk about what's happening there with Barclays Center, and it looks like the Islanders' bid to build an arena at Belmont Park could be kind of the key that unlocks a new contract for Tavares. The bid is in, and hopefully they know in the next couple of weeks what's going to happen. And once that comes to pass, you know, Tavares has said multiple times that he doesn't want to leave New York. And you kind of tend to believe him because he seems like a guy who wants to win there. I mean, he's done everything for that team, and he's, you know, single-handedly driven that team forward at times. So you really get the feeling that it's kind of a Stamkos-esque situation where If it comes to pass where he tests the market and the Islanders have a new building in place, maybe he'll lean towards staying with the Islanders. I think the only thing that can really change things for Tavares is, if New York has just an awful season again and there's really no hope of moving forward, you would think he would start to consider his options. He's not a guy who probably wants to spend the next 8 years of his career or 7-8 years of his career playing on a team that's not really going anywhere. He's got championship potential written all over him, and he's kind of that piece that can take a team to the next level. So if he wants to chase the Stanley Cup and the Islanders don't look anywhere near it and they don't have a building in place, then you start to question whether or not he's going to re-sign.
Jared Clinton from the Hockey News joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 13 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour. At 7-1, are you buying the Vegas Golden Knights? And if you are, Jared, give us some reasons. It's an expansion team, it's this, it's that, but why is this team 7-1?
I think the reason the team's 7-1 is a combination of two things. The goaltending they've been getting is just remarkable. Marc-Andre Fleury, before he went down, was playing so well. Malcolm Subban, for all of the talk about him being, unprepared for such a role, and I know I said it myself, I can admit that, he played spectacularly, and Oscar Dansk last night, shut down one offense that a lot of people look to as one of the better ones in the league. So I think the goaltending they're getting right now has just been impeccable. You wonder if it's going to continue. For all the good things we can say now about Subban and Dansk, I still don't have that much faith in that combination. The good news is that Fleury's coming back soon, so if he's back in practice this week or early next week, maybe he's back into game action by the end of next week or early 2 weeks from now. So that's good news for the Golden Knights, so hopefully he can kind of solidify that crease for the time being. But I think the one guy who's not getting enough credit and maybe should be getting more credit right now is Gerard Gallant. We saw it in Florida when he was with the Panthers. He's just a tremendous coach, and his players love to play for him. And he's done it again with a kind of a ragtag group that people didn't really expect that much of. When the Panthers won the Atlantic Division title, a few years back, just about nobody would have picked them to win that. And I think Gallant just has a way of pushing the right buttons at the right time to get his team to click. You do wonder if some of what we're seeing is unsustainable. We are seeing a team that kind of isn't running the possession game, and they are kind of getting dominated on the shot clock on a nightly basis. So you hope that doesn't mean that this is going to all collapse suddenly and that one of the best stories in the league isn't going to fall apart, overnight. But right now, the way Gallant's coaching this group and the way he's kind of pushing the right buttons paired with the goaltend they're getting is really making for one heck of a story.
Jared, great stuff. We appreciate your time as always. And once again, if you want to read some of his fine work, pick up the latest hockey news. What we're going to delve into later this week, I think, is the edition where it shows the top 50 players from each team in their history and the fact that there's two Winnipeg Jets teams. I think that'll rile fans up.
I'm sure it will.
Jared, we appreciate your time. At THN Jared Clinton on Twitter once again. Thanks, Jared.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Jared. Take care, man.
Have you guys seen that edition of the hockey news?
No.
They have listed the top 50 players of every franchise. I'm going to bring it in later this week. We'll discuss it. But, of course, there is two, the Howardchucks and the Steens are with the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, my God.
And the top 50 players for the Jets are, the Antropovs and the Wheelers.
What
a
joke. That's just brutal, man.
I thought that would... I was going to make sure we're all in a good mood before I brought that up and brought it in. But we'll do it later this week and just get the thoughts on that. But there's
50 of them.
There's literally the Winnipeg Jets with the two versions. There's 100 players that are listed as your top 50
that
for both.
That is so ridiculous, man. That
and really, what do you do if you're Arizona? Do you literally pick 50 players from their existence?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I guess. We'll talk about that later in this week. This segment was a presentation of Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca. Build with confidence. Your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Ha ha ha! 12th caller through, 780-1290. TSN 1290 and redtag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights, the 7-1 Knights, Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We will supply return airfare to and from Sin City, free parking at Winnipeg at Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. Two hockey tickets to see the Jets and the Golden Knights again at their home arena in Vegas, the T-Mobile Arena on the 10th. Four nights accommodations right on the strip and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show on TSN 1290, then 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable and 5:15 p.m. with the Afternoon Ride with Husser and Rick Ralph. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Our next grand prize announcement is coming up November the 6th. For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. The 12th caller through at 780-1290. Your first of two chances this morning on The Big Show to qualify. And it's presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And us here at TSN 1290. I know you believed the Golden Knights would be very competitive this year, but did you think they'd be 7-1?
No, nobody did. This is the scary thing is we all know what happens in Vegas when you've been on a heater for a bit, right? there's the other side of a heater, and you just kind of wonder. At some point in time, it'll probably come crashing in, and they'll work their way to something along the lines of 500, but... But even so, with Gerard Gallant and what they're putting together, they're a feisty, well-organized squad, and they are relying heavily on their goaltending, and the goaltending is putting up some spectacular numbers. But still, you got to love, just even from a tightness and a mechanical standpoint almost, they look pretty sound.
So you're telling the Knights to get out. Get out of Vegas while you can.
That's right, absolutely.
Well, they have had a lot of home games as well, so we'll see what they can do on the road. But I believe in Gerard Gallant. I think he's a really good coach. I thought Jared Clinton made a good point. Like, you have to give him some credit for this. And Shane Knighty was on the Afternoon Ride yesterday with Husser and Rick Ralph and basically saying that, like, it was the first 2 weeks of camp. It was a lot of the coaching staff just getting to know some of the players. Like, they probably knew their names and their stats, but just their faces, they didn't know who was who. So to get off to this start is pretty impressive for the Las Vegas Golden Knights as an expansion team.
Especially when you couple that with the likely fire sale of guys in their upcoming UFAs and what they're going to do with that whole thing, right?
Yeah, for sure. Mr. Rewicki, who's our qualifier first time this morning?
It's Tracy Meredith.
Tracy Meredith.
Marius.
Marius.
Yeah.
Tracy Marius.
I'm so excited.
How are you?
I'm good.
Have you been trying for a while to get through?
Yeah.
And it finally happened. Today was the day.
Yep.
Well, we appreciate you listening to TSN 1290, Tracy, and simply for qualifying, you get a Jets Gear gift card, and you're in for a grand prize draw on the 6th. Do you know whom you'd be taking with you if you won?
My husband. He's probably listening right now.
And he's saying, "Hi, Paul.
Cute.
Hey, Paul. Have you two been to Vegas before?"
Yeah, but we didn't go this year. So.
Oh well, and now you can watch hockey.
So you need a trip. You need a good trip then.
Yeah.
So you know who you're going with. You've been to Vegas before, but this is your trip this year that could happen for you, and you could watch some National Hockey League hockey.
Yep.
Outstanding stuff, Tracy. Well, we really appreciate you listening. We congratulate you and give you a Jets Gear gift card and wish you all the best for the big draw on the 6th.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Tracy Meredith. Marius. Tracy Marius.
Marius. I got to get my ears checked, boys. This is bad.
The funniest ever was we have Dave calling, and the guy was like, "No, it's Greg." Like,
that was funny.
I'm not even trying to hide it. You. Who's our qualifier? No excuses.
Who's our qualifier today? Tom. Actually, it's Ezekiel. Oh, wow. It's pretty close. So congratulations, Tracy Marius, and her husband Paul will be accompanying her if her name is drawn. And we'll do it again at 8:15. We talked about the lineup yesterday at practice. The top two lines were the same. The next two lines had Kopp centering Tanev and Mathias, and the next line had Hendricks in between Lemieux, and then Armia, Patan, Dano were filling in throughout the line rushes and the drills yesterday. A lot of speed worked on yesterday. Here's head coach Paul Maurice on the decision that goes into putting the bottom six forward lines, or the bottom two forward lines together.
Balance, for one thing. We have some shooters in our top six. We need some guys that can kill penalties, and then intensity and style of play. It's not an easy job sometimes to come off the bench in a 6 to 8 to 10 minutes and be sharp and strong, but that's part of that job, so we need guys that can do that.
And here's head coach Paul Maurice on if whom they are playing, as in Pittsburgh on Thursday or Columbus on Friday, dictates who dresses in those bottom two lines.
It's also the role that you need. Like, if we're going to have guys kill penalties, normally penalty killers look a certain way. But then how the group fits, right? How the line fits. Is there chemistry there with the other players? Can they feel free to score? That's there. It's usually a simpler game, pucks to the net and grind. But having skill on your bottom six is what we'd all shoot for. But we got to kill penalties, and we got guys that can win face-offs to do that, guys that will get into shooting lanes.
Did he say feel free to score? Like the old Mike Keane line, feel free to mix in a win once in a while? And to me, that reiterates, like, it doesn't matter how you want to put this together. It does. But how you put this together, like, they're waiting for somebody to step up, like for somebody to just start, feel free to score,
well,
feel free to add some points.
You're going
to
be waiting a long time if your third line is going to be Tanev, Kopp, Mathias going into this game. And I just refuse to believe that's reality. I cannot accept that's the thinking of Paul Maurice, that Tanev, Kopp, Mathias in practice yesterday as the third line, that's ultimately going to be the third line for the game. If you're looking for production... Oh, yeah? Okay.
We'll get into it with Dennis Bayak and much more on the Jets when he joins us next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show in the Royal Sports Power Hour, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki with you. It is 33 minutes past the hour here on a Wednesday. Jets will get back to practice today and then leave for Pittsburgh. They'll take on the Penguins tomorrow night and then be in Columbus Friday night. They'll return home on Saturday to host the Penguins on Sunday evening here in the city. The face of the Jets on TSN 3 and one of our main voices here on TSN 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak, joins us now. Good morning, Dennis.
What's up, guys?
Nothing, Holmes.
Okay.
All right. I like that. That's a sign to me, Dennis, that you need a hockey game this week.
I do. It's been way too long.
You're talking like the kids do now.
Yeah, I know.
Before we get into the break and the practice and some of the things the Jets have been discussing, the schedule is a very good one for the Winnipeg Jets this year, despite the fact that the players would like to get a game in before tomorrow night.
Yeah, it is. You know what? When you look at it, anytime you can stay away from a couple of things. Number one, a whole bunch of back-to-backs. They've only have nine. One of those will be this week with Pittsburgh tomorrow, Columbus on Friday. There's not a night where after a home game you leave and play the next night on the road. So there's some of the little things. Yeah, it gets busy. I mean, they start a stretch, after this game tomorrow, or after this little break here, they start a stretch of 18 and 35 days to the end of November, but you know what? We heard the players talk. This is a lot of days of practice, and so they're looking forward to getting back into action. And Patrick Laine probably said it best. He said, "I just assume play every day," and I think that's the way the players are wired, and they don't mind the off days. But there comes a point where it's time to get back to work.
Dennis, we were talking a little bit about sort of the way the NHL goes about marketing itself and how traditionally it's been more team-based than individual-based. And one of the beauties of hockey is the overall team mentality and how it's the crest on the front, not the nameplate in the back. But would you like to see, is there a time and place here now when you have the likes of McDavid and and Crosby and all the young talent and the talent that's just throughout the league here, should the league focus a little bit more on its star power and take advantage of it from a marketing standpoint?
Well, it tries. I think some of the issues that you're dealing with, you mentioned a couple guys there, and Sidney Crosby would probably be more apt to do it and do it well. And then you're dealing with a bunch of young guys that I really am not sure they're ready to let their personalities come out to the public, whether it be via television, radio, print, social media, whatever the case may be. And I mean, social media is here to stay, but it does play a part in what players say and do because they get jumped on so quickly, and some guys can handle it and some guys can't. But I think as players get older, I think you can maybe get into more of that. The situation with the NHL right now is some of the star players are just in their late teens or early 20s, and you're talking Matthews, you're talking McDavid, you're talking Patrick Laine here, you're talking Zach Werenski in Columbus, and I just don't know if those guys, just because of their age and limited number of games in the NHL, are ready to open themselves up the way the NHL maybe would like them to.
This might be an obvious question, Dennis, but I hear a lot of the things being worked on in practice is team speed stuff. What exactly are the Jets trying to get better at?
Well, just be faster. Play the game faster, make decisions faster, where it's instinct. It's not where you're taking a split second to make that decision, because in today's NHL game, you take that split second and you're caught. And they've really worked on that. And I mentioned this last night when I was on with the guys. You go down to practice, and if you get down to ice level and watch just how quick the game is down there, and you know, we sit up in the press box during games, and it's a lot slower up there than what it is down at ice level. But that's kind of what they worked on, is just make the game faster. They did spend some time, you know, obviously on special teams again yesterday a little bit, and just to try and be sharp on that. And if you get the opportunity, try and capitalize, and that makes your practice time worthwhile. But the game is just getting faster and faster and faster, and you know, that's when you get days off. That's what you try and work on, and they certainly worked on it Monday after having Sunday off to try and get everything back up to pace. And Paul Maurice touched on it yesterday. They're the first 5 or 6 minutes tomorrow night. That's going to be the challenge for everybody on their first couple shifts, is to get back up to game speed.
Dennis, we watched Nolan Patrick leave the ice yesterday after his head goes into the boards, and it didn't look very good for him. And an interesting or strange situation with Jonathan Quick the night before, where he's taken off the ice and then back in something like 37 seconds. Your thoughts on how the NHL is going about applying its concussion protocol rules?
You know, they're trying. I'm not sure it's ever going to be perfect. I mean, immediately the one in Toronto, there was the conspiracy theorist coming out that, you know, only in Toronto were, you know, late in a period, the number one goalie of the other team would get pulled out of a game. And you know, I don't buy that at all. I just think it's, you know, they needed to take a second look at it. And players will tell you, yes, I'm fine. I mean, obviously the Nolan Patrick one, you could tell right off the bat that he was in some discomfort. Wasn't even that hard of a hit, but the glass, from what it used to be from the old days when you took somebody to the back glass and that glass gave a couple of feet on a good hit and then bounced right back, those days are gone. It's all the thicker glass, the harder glass now, and when your head hits on that glass, there's not much give. And that's kind of what happened with Nolan Patrick. And you know, they try to jump on it as quickly as they possibly can, but I think the Jonathan Quick one was they must have wanted to have a second look at it. They saw the referee go over and talk to Jonathan Quick immediately. He said he was fine, and then they must have taken a second look at it upstairs and said, you know what, that was a pretty good elbow or a shot to the head, so let's get him out of the game here. And it's never going to be perfect. You're always going to have the situations where a guy's going to convince somebody. Players are going to go back in the dark room, and if they're dinged up just a little bit, they'll convince their medical people that, hey, I'm fine, I can go back in there. And that's the issues that they're dealing with. But they're working at it, and it's something that has to be treated very carefully. But it starts with the players. If you feel that you've had your bell rung, just go and get checked out and take the time that you need and get yourself ready, because you feel for all players. You really feel for a youngster like Nolan Patrick. You were watching the Edmonton game last night. They're talking about Drake Caggiula, who's had three concussions already. This one was the least severe of the three that he's already had. And here's a guy that's still a young man. And so just the players. The players have to really be willing to take part in this. And if you get dinged up, leave. Get checked out.
Dennis Bayak joining us on the Big Show this morning, broadcasting to you live from the Royal Sports Studio on Pembina Highway. Jim Toll, Trey Wessler, Brendan Rewicki with you as well. Looking at these bottom two lines from practice yesterday, Dennis, there's going to have to be some roster moves by tomorrow night's game, is there not?
Well, if Matt Hendricks comes in and looks like he's going to, then yes. I mean, Adam Lowry looks like he's going to make the trip from what Paul Maurice said yesterday, but we don't expect him to play. He needs to get into some practice time. There won't be any practice on Saturday. So now you're playing for Thursday, Friday, Sunday. The first practice Adam Lowry's going to get in. Now he'll skate on his own, but he needs some contact drills and he needs a hard practice. So the first time that's going to happen is going to be on Monday. So, but if Matt Hendricks comes in, then somebody's going to have to, obviously get moved. There's options, I guess, and, depends which path they take. Do they want to have another look at Brendan Lemieux? If that's the case, then you know, you're going to have to do something maybe with one of your forwards, or do they just look at defenseman Tucker Pullman and say, look, him sitting here and not playing is not doing him any good as a rookie in the league. He needs to play. We can bring him back up at any point in time. Do we send him down? So, or do we put someone through that we're going to have to put on waivers, and that gives us, if he does clear, that gives us 30 days to do something with that player. So, those are the options that they'll weigh later today, the minute they get through practice and get clearance that, yes, Matt Hendricks is ready to go.
Dennis, with the NHL players not being able to go to the Olympics, there's now a push to allow CHL players to go and partake if possible. Your thoughts, would you like to see that come to fruition?
You know what? I'm kind of torn on that one. I mean, I would like to see those players get that opportunity. I think any time you get an opportunity to go and play at an event like that, it's something that should be taken advantage of. Obviously, politics came into play between the players and the Players Association and the NHL, and that never got sorted out where the NHL players could go. And yet, at the same time, the junior operators are trying to, you know, have their businesses succeed, and you get tugged so many different ways. You've got under-18s, and you've got under-17s, and you've got the World Junior coming up that you're going to lose your top players. You know, and it's not just that you're losing them now anymore for the tournament. I mean, the evaluation camp starts early in December, so you're basically have lost that player for a month. And, you know, some players, some teams can withstand it, some can't. I really think they need to take a look at it, and it's going to be the same players. Obviously, it's going to be the guys who are at the World Junior that are going to go back to their teams for a month and then turn around and be gone for another month and then try and get themselves back on North American time when they get back. And, you know, the 18 and the 19-year-olds don't have the experience that the 23 and the 24 and 25-year-olds do, even from that level. But at the same time, from a pure player standpoint, I think it's a privilege and an honor anytime you get the opportunity to go play in an event like that.
Dennis, tell us what you expect from this game in Pittsburgh and again on Sunday and then Columbus. It seems weird, but by this Sunday, they'll be done with both the Penguins and the Columbus Blue Jackets for the season.
Yeah, that is a bit of a strange little twist in the schedule. But, I mean, tomorrow night, Pittsburgh, you know, they're two-time Stanley Cup champions, and no matter how you say it or no matter how you want to dissect their team, they're still the defending champions the last 2 years running. So, and they can still put pucks in the net. It took Phil Kessel one little snap of the wrist in the overtime last night, and that game was over. I mean, Edmonton certainly is fighting it from a scoring standpoint. They had glorious chances that they couldn't bury, but Pittsburgh is still Pittsburgh. They still have Malkin. They still have Letang healthy, and that's key for them. I mean, if they can keep him healthy, that certainly helps so many areas of their game. And then, of course, you still got Sidney Crosby. Their net binding with Matt Murray seems solidified. You know, Antti Niemi got put on waivers, got picked up. So they'll, you know, they'll see what they can find as far as that backup is concerned. And then Columbus, Columbus is a team that I don't know if around the National Hockey League, despite their long winning streak last year, if it's still a case some nights where, people don't realize how good a team they are. And, they're a tough team to play against. Sergei Bobrovsky is as good as there is as far as net mining is concerned. So this is a tough trip. It's a tough weekend, very tough weekend. and then next week you jump right back into two divisional games with Minnesota and Dallas. So, but as the old saying goes, if it was easy, everybody would do it. That's the nature of the National Hockey League, and you know, they're in a tough month here.
Yeah, I knew Columbus was good, and I was still impressed with them with what I saw that night against the Winnipeg Jets and their depth and everything else. Should be a good weekend of Jets hockey. It gets started tomorrow night, of course. The team will practice today. We'll have the latest later in the afternoon as we have Moose Hockey live from Chicago coming up. 10:45 today on the station, 11 a.m. Mitch Peacock will have the call. Dennis will be on the television tomorrow night from Pittsburgh. Thanks for doing this, sir.
Gentlemen, you take care. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
Talk to you next week.
Your NHL news and notes are next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Big Show with Jim Chill, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you live from the Royal Sports Studio at TSN 1290. We're going to talk some football with Darren Bombing at the top of the hour and some more hockey, another chance for you to qualify. And don't forget, an hour of your phone calls on the Boss Pizza fan line as the Jets return to practice today, 10:30 at Bell MTS Iceplex. I believe that was originally scheduled for 11, so if you're going to go out there and or want to and watch the Jets practice, it's at 10:30 this morning now, and then they'll get on a plane and head to Pittsburgh this afternoon. NHL news and notes time on the Royal Sports Power Hour here on the Big Show. Gentlemen, let's get back in the conversation, get your thoughts too, Brandon, on the Las Vegas Golden Knights, 7-1. Are you buying yet? Are you buying Golden Knights stock?
Well, not if it's like right now. It's 7-1 is crazy, right? It's a dream world right now for the Vegas Golden Knights. Sorry, and it's being propped up just by some. They're like what I said earlier. They're in Vegas and they're on a hot streak. And at some point in time, that comes crashing down. And the house ain't necessarily going to win here with the Golden Knights, but they're going to come to a break-even point where that 7-1 at some point in time is going to be much more reflective, I believe, of something sniffing around 500 is what I would expect them to end their season off at. But it's a great story, and what a fantastic way to sort of crash into a market and coming out of the gate like this. The goaltending, you know, now they're like down to right, their third guy in between the pipes there, and it's still holding strong somehow. But it's they're going to they're going to come back down to earth in a hurry at some point.
Yeah, I'll buy a little bit of stock. I'm not going to go all in on it, but if it's playoff stock too, right? I might dabble in a little bit of that.
Would dabble in playoff stock.
They are fast as hell, and with Gerard Gallant behind the bench, their structure's in place. They're just, I mean, when you get off to a start like this, they're going to be a tough out in every game they get into the rest of the way out here. And if Marc-Andre Fleury, who's expected to come back fairly soon as well, if he gives you above-average goaltending, I don't know. I think they can push this. I think they can push this pretty far into the season now.
Well, I'm looking at the West standings. In the Central, there's only one team that's played 10 games. It's Chicago. They're 5-3-2. They have 12 points. St. Louis is 6-2-1, have 13 points. Colorado is third in the Central with 10 points. Going to the Pacific, three teams that I didn't have in the playoffs. Los Angeles has 15 points and is 7-1-1 in 9 games. Vegas is 7-1 in 8 games with 14 points. And Vancouver is coming off a 4-1 road trip. In 9 games, they're 5-3-1 and have 11 points. And a lot of the talk around that Jets-Vancouver game was, well, they beat Vancouver, but they should have throttled them. They should have. Vancouver just went on the road and went 4-1. Then Dallas is in the wild card. Nashville's in the wild card with 10 points each. Calgary has 10 points. And then Anaheim has 9. Winnipeg has played the least amount of games of all those teams I just mentioned. They've only played 7. They're 4-3 and have 8 points. And then you get into like the Minnesotas and the Edmontons. 2-3-2 for Minnesota. 2-5-1. Minnesota shut out at home last night. 1-0 by Buffalo. like, how much are we buying into this stuff? Or do we go 10, 15 games and then you say, okay, wait a minute here? Or are you buying in already?
Well, Chicago and St. Louis are at 10 games with Colorado as well. Like, Colorado's the one maybe to go, you know, where you go, just because they're supposed to for sure be below the Jets here. It's neat, huh? These the early landscapes are always – it always creates a bunch of controversy and debate. But and you're starting to creep towards having to abandon it's early, right? You're still there a little bit, but at least you can start to raise an eyebrow and start to lean one way or the other. Certainly the early – and I believe this, like, similar to preseason, where if there's negative or things of concern early – those, I think that you should be very aware of. If things are real a la the Golden Knights, early, you pull the reins back big time on things that are positive, going, okay, that's probably going to settle back towards the means. If a team is doing things early that it has done in its past that have dragged them down and held them back, that to me is of great concern. When there hasn't been noticeable improvement or they're at least not projecting in the right way, a la our Winnipeg Jets and some of the defensive concerns, PK concerns, all those sorts of things.
I apologize. I want to correct myself. Vancouver shut out Minnesota at home last night, 1-0. Nielsen with the shutout. It was Buffalo shutting out Detroit at home last night. So the Canucks went into Minnesota last night and finished a road trip 4-1 with a 1-0 shutout over the Wild.
Yeah, and how many fans do you think are happy about that? In Vancouver right now, right? Like the more wins they get, the further away they get from the lottery. And the team that they have isn't going to be a playoff team. It's that whole double-edged sword, right? Because Travis Green is looking like he's doing a good job, and he looks to be a real solid up-and-coming coach. But it's just you want those you want to lose some of those close games, right? You want to be in there and fight and claw, and then you know, give up a late goal and fall 1-0 instead of winning 1-0. But I look at a team like the Wild, and I think they're in big-time trouble just because of the nature of what's going on there and the amount of injuries.
Stuff, yeah.
They're just getting decimated right now. And now Parise's out for 2 months. You still have Granlin, Coyle, Niederreiter out for extended periods of time. I mean, that's I don't know how much longer you can bank on Chris Stewart, given I think he's got 5 goals right now in 7 games to lead their team in scoring. So the Wild really got to find a way to try and weather the storm early on and pick up some tight wins, because that's a team I would look at similar to Dallas last year, where you're just kind of dealt a crap hand and there's not really a whole lot you can do about falling behind early in the season.
6 goals. You got one against Calgary on Saturday night.
I do think a team like Minnesota, though, is maybe strong enough defensively to, even if they don't go and perform at the same level last year, they'll still hold their own just because of their overall defensive integrity.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Like, this is the question that we have right now, is how much do you weigh into not just the Jets, but all these teams and all what we're seeing so far? I always like to say, and I have 10 to 15 games before, but as you point out, that some of these teams I mentioned are 10 games. And
to me, it's really 20 games. In the NFL, it's 6 weeks. In the NHL, it's 20 games. Like, before you can really go, okay, here's the deal. 20 games, I think. But you'll start taking your leanings, right? Right around now, where you start to lean certain ways or one another. And then teams almost have to try and convince you, pull you away from your early takes.
So, given these standings, it's a massive weekend for the Winnipeg Jets. They have the Wilds and the Edmonton Oilers and the teams like that are struggling. And if you want to take a step and make the playoffs, this is a big weekend for them.
Well, this is the deal with the Winnipeg Jets, and hopefully the players have a profound understanding of that. If you have the dream to creep and climb, wrestle your way above the playoff line, every single freaking game is massive. So cut the horse crap, dog crap shows that we saw with Columbus and early on with Toronto and Calgary. Those types of games are unacceptable. You cannot be that inconsistent and cross the playoff line.
But isn't that the same for the other teams too?
Who cares about the other teams? We're not concerning ourselves with the other. If the Jets want to make the playoff lines, that level of inconsistency is unacceptable.
We'll talk some Bombers next with Darren Bombing on The Big Show, live from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. 4 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to tip the Boss Pizza fan line. 1 hour of your phone calls on anything and everything coming up at 9 a.m. today if you want to weigh in on what we're talking about. And, of course, your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is right around the corner. TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep Caring for Kids across Manitoba, kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Time to get back into the Bombers and the CFL, and we welcome in the host of CFL 60 and Manuk Dentcher Blue Bomber Game Day and all our Bomber coverage here on TSN 1290. Mr. Darren Bombing, how are you, sir?
That's a lot of ands.
And a frequent guest here on The Big Show.
What's going on this morning, guys? Lots to get to. You know, it's late in the season, the Bombers are in the playoff push. They've locked down a spot, obviously. They're still fighting for that home date on November 12th, but an eventful day of practice yesterday, no doubt.
Would you say that Richie Hall, in hearing him talk about his defense, he really sounded sort of down about it. Is he, I don't want to say like sort of lost for answers, but did he almost sound like he was knocking on that door?
You know, I don't know if it's defeat in his voice, but, you know, Richie Hall and Paul Appelese, but in particular Richie Hall, because this Blue Bombers defense has been, you know, a point of conversation all season long. We're afforded the opportunity to speak to assistant coaches once a week. I always speak to Richie Hall. I want to get his temperature, you know, feel it out a little bit every single week just to see how he feels. Every week we talk about explosion plays. Every week we talk about effort level and tackling. But this past week, I've never heard, you know, so much emotion in his voice. He was embarrassed with the effort level of the Blue Bombers defense in that loss to Toronto on Saturday. He was concerned with, you know, just it comes down to effort. He said, you know, there was a couple plays where he watched guys jog, you know, didn't finish plays. At this juncture of the season, to hear the defensive coordinator speak that way, I feel fans should be as concerned as he was, because, you know, he's not getting the production he needs for this team to win football games. We're starting to see now, Troy, you and I and Chris Walby talked about it, you know, on the post-game show on Saturday as well. This is what happens when the offense and the special teams don't make up for, you know, the drawbacks of this Blue Bombers defense. And I don't know if you can make personnel changes, like, you know, big ones at this juncture. You know, no Jamal Westerman, no Maurice Leggett. We know the Blue Bombers would like stronger linebacking play. I don't know if they go to Jesse Briggs or Thomas Miles, the former Manitoba Bison and Churchill High School product, or if they go to an American. But if they haven't made the changes by now, I don't know if they ever will.
Darren, we're talking about Justin Medlock and have all week, but if he hits that kick at the end of the game, is the same fever around Medlock and his season? Because really that's just one kick, it would have won the game. But how much different would it be, the feeling around Justin Medlock, had he hit that kick?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, I don't know if there'd be as much outlash or you know.
Of course there wouldn't, but that's Disney World, isn't it?
Well, that's what I'm asking, because I go back to that BC game when he missed the game winner from 50 yards, and I thought, is this a concern? And the season wore on and wore on and wore on, and we all know how good he is. We all know how many points he's put up this year, but like that was week two, wasn't it, when he missed the 50-yarder against BC, and then he admitted yesterday it's basically not been a good season overall.
Well, let's just look at the numbers, fellas. Out of eight kickers that qualify in the CFL with the correct amount of attempts and that sort of thing, Justin Medlock ranks last in the CFL. Every single team except for it's escaping me right now, but there's eight kickers in the CFL that rank better than Justin Medlock. 76.7% on the season. He is the league's leading scorer. Nobody has attempted more field goals than Justin Medlock. Nobody has attempted more from beyond 50, where he is 5 of 9 this season, but he's struggling. You know, in speaking with him yesterday, it's clear, you know, you could see the emotion on his face. He is, you know, he described his performance this season overall with a very interesting word. He says, it's laughable. That's the standard he set for himself. He is nowhere near complacent or satisfied with where he is. It seems like he's confused why he's having this lack of success, and his average is so low this season. I asked him, is it a technical thing? Is it the holder? You know, having Matt Coates versus Weston Dressler, are you hitting the ball correctly? I asked him about technical issues versus mental issues. He goes, it's not technical. I know Justin Medlock is somebody that works tirelessly on his craft. He is a tactician when it comes to kicking the football, both punting, place kicking, and kickoff. He figures it must be a mental thing because he knows it's not something, in his technique. But it is really strange. You know, again, we're late in the season here, and the downward trend continues for Medlock. But plain and simple, guys, this is the thing. Mike O'Shea, all of his Blue Bomber teammates, all of the coaches in that facility still have all of the confidence in the world in Justin Medlock. That message is never going to change. If it's a 56-yarder or a 26-yarder, they're going to trot him out there and expect him to hit it. He was hitting from 50-plus. He hit one from 56 in practice yesterday, seemingly no issues with the wind at his back. So he still has it. It's all about focus. That was the word he used as well in just trying to move forward. Not looking back at all, Justin Medlock said. Just wants to focus on the future, and it's time for the playoffs. They need to lean on him. They need to have him perform when it matters.
I almost never missed in playoff in practice. Almost never. It's a different deal, man. And when you ask his teammates and his coaches, for the most part, feel the same that we do when we see him out on the field now. Where last year it was a foregone conclusion, it was going through the uprights. Right now, it's a little bit wonky, and people don't talk about this, but Justin Medlock's not only dead last in field goal percentage, he's dead last in punting as well. So when you're talking about $170,000+, yeah, 32-year-old athlete, it's interesting times here for Justin Medlock and for all of us. Let's hope that he gets on track and ultimately is perfect when called upon come playoff time. I want to ask you, in a position I think is wildly important, and as much as I like Kevin Fogg at that strong, in a general sense, DB, in seeing the amount of success the run game with Toronto and with Calgary upcoming, if the Bombers are able to secure a home playoff game and move forward, I wonder if Mike O'Shea and Richie Hall and everyone there, like, is Fogg going to be able to bring enough to the table when you know you're struggling with your middle linebacker already in controlling the run game, and having Fogg there is kind of a double wham, like two of your three linebackers, you're maybe not very confident in controlling the run game. Can you stick with Fogg here come playoff time in that position to get what's needed to be done there?
Well, it was still Kevin Fogg at practice yesterday. I expected to be Kevin Fogg at practice all week, and he'll start, unless something drastically changes, he'll start on Saturday against the BC Lions. I always thought Brandon Alexander was maybe a better fit schematically at strong side linebacker than Kevin Fogg. A bigger body, more lanky, a little bit more rangy, maybe not as quick or a fleet of foot as Kevin Fogg, but somebody I thought would be able to, as you mentioned, that linebacking play and stopping the run and making that those physical plays inside the box near the line of scrimmage, I thought Brandon Alexander would be that guy. Now, they flipped Alexander and Brian Walker 2 weeks ago. So now Alexander plays on the inside at that the field side halfback spot. So he is playing closer. He is somebody that will step up, when there is a run play either through the middle or off the edge. He's somebody that will be there on that wide side of the field. But, they're going to stick with Kevin Fogg. He's their guy right now. This is the thing. When you have injuries, you brought it up, Troy, in the pregame show last week. The Bombers are around 60 man games lost to injury, where the CFL average is upwards of 200. They've been extremely fortunate. But when it's this late in the season and you're kind of scrambling to fill in holes, you make do with the best you can without disrupting too much of the continuity you have at other positions. So they're going to go with Kevin Fogg moving forward. He's still going to return punts, as we saw him do quite well last game. And, the Bombers will do the best they can with what they have.
Darren Bauman joining us on the big show this morning from the Royal Sports Studio on Pembina Highway here at TSN 1290. DB, right before we let you go, an update on the O-line. Travis Bond left practice yesterday, and Jamarcus Hardwick, went down in practice yesterday, did not return. Right. Travis Bond did not practice again. Now, what's the latest for them, and how concerned are you for the O-line come Saturday?
Yeah, Travis Bond went down to injury in the first half last game. Upper body, did not return, did not practice yesterday. No update from Mike O'Shea. Every single week, here's the deal, guys. Mike O'Shea will never rule a player out, and he will always say he is hopeful they will play that week. But you start to read between the lines, you start to decipher. My gut is telling me Mike O'Shea doesn't expect Travis Bond to play this week, or Mike O'Shea is probably leading me to believe that he's not expected to play this week. Pat Neufeld, the veteran Canadian, helps that ratio a little bit, being a Canadian filling in for the American Travis Bond. He'll start at left guard. That's the way things look right now. Hardrick went down to injury in practice yesterday. Lower body, they were looking at his lower left leg. Popped up, energetic guy. We all know that from Jamarcus Hardrick, always running up and down the field. Tried to run on it, stopped, and then walked off the field on his own power and did not return. If he can't go, Manasseh Fekete, an American who has been on the 46-man roster for pretty much every game the last two seasons, if Hardrick can't go, Fekete will start at right tackle. But again, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the only team in the CFL up to this point who'd started the same five offensive linemen all season long. How will that affect the offense, the run game, protecting Matt Nichols? We'll have to wait and see. But, again, those injuries, bumps and bruises, catching up on Winnipeg, really at the worst possible time with 2 weeks left in the season.
Thanks a lot, Darren. We appreciate it.
Always good to talk to you guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Dave. Bate.
We will have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You heard the man. Ring those phones, 780-1290, as the 12th caller through will be our latest and newest qualifier for TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca's Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests, and we have four of them already. One more to go this November to Las Vegas, where they'll see the Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Prize includes return airfare to and from Sin City, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly, four nights accommodations right on the strip at the MGM Grand, and $1,290 in cold, hard cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Maybe spread a little shekels down on red or black. Do whatever you'd like with that money. And also two hockey tickets to the Jets and the Golden Knights once again on the 10th of November at T-Mobile Arena. You can listen for your chance to qualify weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 5:15 p.m. on the afternoon ride with Husser and Rick Ralph, and of course on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski weekdays at 12:15 p.m. Also bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings here in the Big Show with our fifth and final grand prize announcement coming up a week from this Monday on November the 6th. It's almost November.
That is weird, isn't it?
It is weird. It's supposed to snow tomorrow.
Still horse crap that we're not somehow attached and accompanying people on this trip, man.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a pretty positive guy. That ain't right.
It ain't right. They haven't taken us outside the perimeter once on the Big Show.
I was trying to think when was the last time I was outside the perimeter. I think I drove. Oh, I drove home last summer, yeah.
Last summer?
Yeah.
Like you mean the summer that just went by?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, this past summer, yeah. Anyways, enough about us. For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And us here at TSN 1290. Who is our 12th caller through?
It is Al Gauthier.
Al Gauthier.
Goat.
Congratulations. You are our latest qualifier, and just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card, and you're in for the grand prize draw. Took some heat on Twitter yesterday, wondering if we drew the name on Monday. I said, no, you got to keep trying. They were qualified, but they weren't sure if we called them or not. I said, you would know by now.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, he was a Yankees fan, so I said, no Yankees fans can win this prize. But, of course, Yankees fans can win this prize. And we wish everybody all the best trying to get through and trying to qualify, and everybody who has qualified. It's been I get asked about this a lot, as I'm sure you guys do, too, about the trip and how great it's going to be to take see the Vegas Golden Knights and Jets. This is, like, something that is – and I keep adding this when we take our callers, too, in the qualifiers. But realistically, all the things to do in Vegas, it seems kind of surreal now that that includes NHL hockey. Bryce Harper was at the Blackhawks and the Golden Knights game last night. Of course, a Las Vegas native.
Which I don't be real weird, like once the Raiders get there as well, right?
Because, like, where else would you – I'm sure you see Bryce Harper. I'm sure you see Vince Neil, as we saw at the home opener. Not that you would recognize him. But celebrities like that, but really in Vegas, you wouldn't really see them unless you know, where would they go? Now there's this pro sports franchise there, and the Raiders are coming, where you could actually see celebrities like you do in other cities going to these games. So it's fascinating. Congratulations, Al. You get a Jets Gear gift card just for doing so. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, gentlemen. Connor Hellebuck has already gotten the nod for the game tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. Are we all in agreement? It'll be Mason Friday in net against Columbus then, and then Hellebuck. What we didn't talk about was who goes Sunday if Mason, like, has a very good game on Friday, if it is him on Friday.
Well, in our worlds, like I think most people's worlds, it would be Hellebuck on Thursday against the Penguins, and then you'd put Mason in against the Blue Jackets, but it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever if Paul Maurice defied the stats that we were talking about and the massive sample size that show the reduction in productivity by goaltenders in back-to-back situations. He did it a number of times last year, and Hellebuck survived and thrived, as I recall, in the situations. So it wouldn't shock me if Paul Maurice did that, but the traditional thought is that you don't, you know, why put him in a bad spot? If Connor Hellebuck goes and has a nice game again, big soft square up against Pittsburgh, win or lose, he just looks good. You go with Steve Mason, and then bam, no matter what. I'd say this much, and this is an interesting point that you pose there, JT, because yesterday in asking Paul Edmonds, at what point in time, like how many games needs to go by with the level of play of Connor Hellebuck before he's the starter? And Paul Edmonds implied or stated, well, pretty much right now he's sort of the de facto starter. I think Connor Hellebuck has done enough good work this year that if he goes and has another solid night against Pittsburgh, regardless of what Mason does Friday night, Hellebuck's back in net Sunday.
Yeah, I think it should be Hellebuck, Mason, Hellebuck for the next three games, but I can't say for certain that Paul Maurice is going to go that way because we've seen him try and buck the trend of the back-to-back thing. And I don't really care what Connor Hellebuck does tomorrow night, whether it's a 19-save shutout and he faces two in the third period or, you know, if he stops 51 of 52. Yeah. Like, I really don't care what he does. He should not be playing Friday night, no matter what, because you want to protect him and protect that hot streak. And it's not like he's out for long because you're putting him right back into the net Sunday. And then if he's good there, then, yeah, roll with him. Keep rolling with him until further notice. But I just think it's just I don't think you need to try and tempt fate here. When you talk about giving Hellebuck too many games in a row, too much overwork, just have him Thursday and you go right back to him Sunday.
Yeah, that's what I would do too. I know that's what I think Paul Maurice will do as well, regardless of how Mason plays Friday, if he does get the start against Columbus. We'll take a break, talk some more hockey next when Gus Katsaros joins us on the Big Show, live from the Royal Sports Studios here at TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, and also online at tsn1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, half an hour away from the Boss Pizza fan line. Lots to get to, Jets practice lines. Yesterday, the goaltending. What would you do? We already got a tweet about it. And somebody suggesting you go Mason on Friday, and then you go Mason on Tuesday against Minnesota and give Hellebuck the other two. I really think as long as Connor Hellebuck's playing well, you just go with him and you get Mason some games where you can.
No question about it. If Hellebuck's continuing to perform at the level that he's at, why in the hell would you give Mason the start on Tuesday? Why would you go on-off like that?
So we'll discuss that. And, of course, the Bombers, some injuries, banged up O-line, everything else with them on the Boss Pizza fan line. The World Series last night continues tonight. Who do you like there? Anything and everything coming up on the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll tee it up for you more in our next segment. But right now we welcome back into the program our good friend Gus Katsaros from McKeen'sHockey.com. Gus, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, always a pleasure getting back into this. Some teams have reached 10 games. Others are about two games away. The Jets, three. They've only played seven. They'll play three in the next four, though. But we were discussing earlier what stands out to you. You know, there's the favorites that aren't doing well, like the Minnesotas and the Edmonton Oilers. And then there's some teams that I look at the Pacific Division and see that the Vegas Knights are up there and everything else. What surprises you so far this year that maybe stands out in your mind?
Probably Arizona being winless at this point in time. I mean, I understand they may not necessarily have won or be 500 or at the top of the division or standings, but you know, to have nine cracks at a win and not come out with anything is a little bit disappointing. Now, there's a bit of a regime change, so I understand that they're putting pieces into play in order to be more competitive in the future, but you should start getting at least some immediate results, at least something to give your fan base an element to wrap around that they can be excited about. And it's a little bit disappointing to see not see immediate success, but in the long run, I think that they're still putting in those pieces to be successful long term.
I'm curious as to how deep into the playoffs ultimately can the Maple Leafs travel with that decor, and if it's deep and if it's potentially hoisting the cup, Gus, what does that say about maybe going forward teams emphasizing a little bit less in what's in their back end?
You know, you bring up a good question because we can go into a million different directions with this. I'm going to try to just keep it focused into one area. I know that the overwhelming, I guess, opinion over the offseason was that the Leafs needed to do something in order to be better defensively. I've always felt that they just needed to be better defensively, responsibly through their forwards, and not necessarily go out and get a really big-name defenseman just for the sake of saying we're getting better defensively. To go deep into the playoffs, you need to be able to play that tight, grinding game, but you also have to be able to score. So if you can outscore your opponent and win game 6-5, to hell with defense. But if you can't win those 6-5 games, and you're coming up short 5-4, then you do need to do something to tinker with defensively. The game as it's being played now, while we still focus on the element of trying to limit shots against, limit goals against, which ultimately should lead to success, the speed, natural creativity, the way that they've tried to open up the game, and the influx of young available talent moves the needle more towards an offensive style than a defensive style. You start playing too much defensively and thinking that that's going to win you a championship, and you start ending up playing prevent. And when you start playing prevent, you start giving the opposition the momentum in which to dictate the terms of the game. So to me, if the Leafs want to go far, all they need to do is just play a little bit better defensively as a team. If they have to go in sharp to get maybe a little bit of depth in order to make sure that they have defensive depth throughout their entire three pairings, that's all fine and good. If they have to win games 6-5, so be it. Let there be a bit of an entertainment value attached to winning a championship. Now, that's not to say that I think that the Leafs are Stanley Cup contenders. It's nice to see them at the top of you know, Vegas odds and all of that. And there are some holes that the Leafs still have to address. But they're good enough to score enough to offset any defensive liabilities, I feel.
And how tough is that when you can score like that? Because that's kind of the case here in Winnipeg, too. They know they can score, but they're trying to focus on team defense. How big of a transition is to that for teams that like have the high-end scoring talent to sort of buy into a system that maybe pulls back a little bit on the scoring to focus on that team defense?
So it's interesting that we say that, because when we look at defense, to me, defense isn't about limiting shots against and goals against. To me, defense is about getting the puck back. So technically, if we really want to go down to it, and maybe this is something where really should be studied a little bit more using numbers, being better defensively means limiting shots and goals against, but you do that by having the puck. So being better defensively should actually show up in your offensive totals more so than in your defensive totals. So when we take the, I like to actually use the example of the Ottawa Senators coming out of the lockout. They came out and Jason Spezza, Danny Heatley, and Daniel Alfredson were wreaking havoc amongst everybody, scoring goals by the dozen, and they just went nuts. And then halfway through the season, you could see a little bit of holes, but they were scoring so much you figured they could just run away with it. And then the playoffs came, and the Sabres taught them a valuable lesson, saying, hey guys, you could score tons of goals, but if we have enough to work on, we could limit your scoring capacity. So that's at the beginning of the lockout. Now we're quite a few years removed, but the game has changed enough to say that, you know what, if you can be better offensively by getting the puck back, that is being better defensively, you'll have much more success rather than just trying to play what I call prevent, just try to prevent shots and goals against and just try to be a bit more passive defensively. So the philosophy has changed a little bit, and to implement something like that is very difficult, because it doesn't take one or two specific things. It takes a variety of elements to come into play, and a lot of stars have to be aligned in order for all of those elements to be working in proper firing order to win a championship.
Gus, there is not a team in the NHL right now that has such a stark separation between its top six and bottom six. And because of the injury to Matthew Perreault, it's created that much more of a separation. And you look at the Jets' bottom six right now, and it's really, it equals two bad fourth line or underperforming fourth line teams. The Jets right now have five legitimate strong veteran players in Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers, Little, and Laine within their top six. How far out of your way do you think coaches should go in spreading out the wealth? And in the Jets situation, when you got five legit guys in your top six and your third line is so almost useless from a production standpoint, how far out of your way do you think a coach should go to spread out that talent to at least give yourself a chance with the third line?
It's interesting. That's a difficult point, because I actually have a piece that's coming out today on RotoWorld about the Jets that addresses some of this. You look at that top six, and they're firing an incredible double digits at 5-on-5. So they're getting a lot of scoring success, but they're getting very high shooting percentages in order to attain that scoring success at even strength. I'm going to leave special teams out of it at the moment. That bottom six is getting zero success. Like, they're shooting, while these players are on the ice, they're averaging, if I recall correctly, somewhere around the 3 to 3.5% range. You're not going to score a lot of goals doing that. So to balance your scoring throughout your lineup, you probably could filter and sprinkle offensive players. However, at the same time, I'm not sure spreading yourself that thin would actually be a positive. What I feel is you could probably focus, from an opposition's perspective, you could focus on the offensively talented player on any given line, try to limit their performance, which would in turn just essentially keep things the same way as it is now. Instead of putting Patrick Laine on the fourth line, similar to what maybe Mitch Marner is doing in Toronto, playing on the fourth line, but playing with lesser competition or quality of competition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you can limit Patrick Laine's ability on that unit, you're not necessarily too worried about what the other two players are if they're not able to put up those big offensive numbers. So, you know, if you're trying to win and you're trying to score and you're trying to really maximize your offensive potential, perhaps at this point in time it really is crucial for them to be able to load up on two lines and just hold steady over the last in your bottom six. You might try to inject a little bit, you know, in spots here and there just to kind of screw with the opposition's ability to line match, but I'm not sure that sprinkling and trying to balance your lineup is the best, most effective method, especially if you're not going to be able to score and to keep yourself in games, and then you're relying on your defense even more so, and goaltending even more so. It's a bit of a snowball effect. At this point in time, they probably should just load up on those first two lines and then try to hope that they don't get very much bad effects with their lower six.
Gus Katsaros joining us from McKeensHockey.com on The Big Show, TSN 1290, as we're broadcasting live from the Royal Sports Studio here at TSN 1290. Gus, Andre Case is a 21-year-old rookie with the Anaheim Ducks. He has 5 points, including 3 goals, in just 5 games this year. And the other night against Philadelphia, he had 2 goals with just 12 minutes and 21 seconds of ice time. You feel this could be the breakout player in the National Hockey League?
I like that. He's really coming in under the radar. Very few people know who he is, what he's about, and his impact. Now, I should probably curb that. I don't think that he's really a breakout player. I feel that he's going to be a decent enough offensive contributor, maybe somewhere in the line of 35, maybe 40 points might even be a ceiling. But you're getting that production from a lower roster player. You're essentially getting this from what would essentially be a third or a fourth line player in the National Hockey League. But he brings so many other elements. There's an energy about him. There's a forechecking ability that is very rare amongst such young players. He never gives up on a play. His skills are a little bit above average, but they complement each other in such a way that I feel that he's going to be the player that everyone's going to be saying, who is this guy? Where did he come out of? Like, how did he end up being on everybody's radar? Well, he should be on everybody's radar right now. At the same time, Anaheim has also been riddled with a few injuries that have given him the opportunity to step up in the lineup. If he gets a whole bunch of offensive production early on, it is going to turn some heads. But I would try to curb the enthusiasm as to maybe he's not necessarily like a 50, 60-point player, but he is going to be a solid all-round player for the Anaheim Ducks, and I'm pretty excited to see where his career progresses this season.
Yeah, and to your point, he had just under 3 minutes of power play time in that game against Philly. Gus, we appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, as always. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Pleasure is always mine. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care, man.
We tee up the Boss Pizza fan line and await your calls next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, coming to you live from the Royal Sports Studios here on Pembina Highway. You wanted it back and we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves for you to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. Both come with either a $500 men's or women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Both have a pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. The Man Cave has two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night December 16th at Bell MTS Place. The Mam Cave has two tickets to Shania Twain's Now Tour May 13th at Bell MTS Place. They both come with either a Winnipeg Jets guys or girls night out, which includes two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, puck party as well. And both have a Rink Water Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. Select your cave of choice online at tsn1290.ca and we'll randomly draw a winner of each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. That's this coming Monday. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. TSN 1290, 7 minutes away from the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, or you can text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. And gentlemen, we'll start with the Winnipeg Jets. They have another practice today, then they'll board the plane to Pittsburgh. And what has been a, well, not a slow week, but a non-playing week up until this point with a lot of practice time, working on speed aspects of the game is what we're told. The Jets lineup yesterday was Scheifele with Connor and Wheeler, Little with Laine and Ehlers, Kopp with Mathias and Tanev, and then Hendricks with Lemieux on the left, and Armia, Patan, or Dano if Hendricks is activated, which we're led to believe he will be, and Adam Lowry will not be, although he'll go on the trip. They have to make two roster moves here. Kulikov back in as well with Meyer, Schrott, Pullman were the extra D-men. What do you kind of see taking place if Hendricks is off the IR and they have to make a couple roster moves here?
Well, the roster moves, I don't know, man. Like, send down, they're certainly not going to move Schrott or risk losing him. So are we, we're just either they carry the two guys or send down Pullman. And I'm not sure what they do in this. You'd think you protect assets for sure, right? Any organization, typically, you're going to do that. So to send down Patan would make a bunch of sense if that's the situation here at hand. I don't – maybe they are willing to – I don't think that they just throw – to me, don't put Dano on waivers. If you ever needed a trade, you're going to trade a guy with a five-year career that's got 0.38 points per game. I think he's a tradable asset, so I just don't see you throwing him on waivers like that. But nonetheless, what I woke up to and was most frightened about, the biggest impact on me is seeing Tanev caught Mathias as a possibility for a third line against Pittsburgh. I almost started crying when I saw that. I can't see that as being reality. There's got to be a joke there. If it's the go Tanev caught Mathias, having Tanev and Mathias on the same line is just absolute disaster. And then Lemieux, Hendricks, and whatever else they do on the other side of that, at the very least, you have to split up Mathias and Tanev.
I agree. I agree. And I'd be okay. Honestly, at this point, I'd be okay with flipping any other grouping of wingers onto that third line over Tanev and Mathias. If you're absolutely committed to having both of those players in the lineup for penalty kill reasons, then put them on the fourth line and give some guys with a bit more offensive punch some time 5-on-5. Because you, against Pittsburgh, you might need one of your bottom six players to get a point 5-on-5. Because there's a decent chance the Jets are going to be in the penalty box. There's a decent chance Pittsburgh puts up a 3 or a 4 spot. And to bank on Laine in the second unit and Scheifele and Wheeler in the first unit to just continue to roll offensively, it's possible, but it's not likely. And I think you're limiting your opportunities to win hockey games this way.
I think Tucker Pullman's going to be sent down because I want to get him playing. And I don't know if they waive Dano or if they just send Nick Batan down.
If Dano gets is waved like that, I will eat my shorts if he doesn't get picked up. Like right here in front of you guys. A little bit of catch up on the side.
Well, now I'm hoping he doesn't get picked up. No, now I'm hoping he does. Sorry. Wait a minute.
With that one up. Yeah. Wait. That might be Freudian somehow, yeah. Some way.
You know what also I just discovered is on the set of they're making a Cobra Kai movie, and it's reuniting Ralph Macchio and William Zabka, who played Johnny Lawrence.
What is this about?
And they're both like in their 50s. Karate Kid. Has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I just came across this. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Roster moves. What would you do on the Boss Pizza fan line? 780-1290, and who would you play against the Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow night? We'll know more after practice today. The Bombers, injury woes, Justin Medlock, all that kind of stuff. And how concerned are you? Because it sounds like Richie Hall is not only really concerned, but a little bit, you know, hands up in the air what to do with this defense. Get your thoughts on that as well. The World Series took place last night, played out as I thought it would. Clayton Kershaw, just dominant. And I loved seeing the history and some of the stuff like Sandy Koufax around the game. Who do you have in Game 2 tonight between the Astros and the Dodgers? And anything and everything else, including William Zabka, Johnny Lawrence, facing off once again.
I know Wicks doesn't know who they are. I don't even know who the heck you're talking about.
You never saw Karate Kid?
I did, but it just does not one of those films that forever entrenches itself in my mind. For
Daniel LaRusso.
On off or wax on, wax off. That's about all I remember.
No Mr. Miyagi, God rest his soul. Wax on, wax off, bonsai tree. But if Elizabeth Shue is anywhere to be found, let's get her in this. Big time on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. I'll send you something.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and the Boston Pizza fan line is open, 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversations. Lots to get to today. World Series, Game 1, what'd you think? Game 2, what do you expect? The Bombers and the injury woes. How concerned are you about these banged up old linemen heading into Saturday against the BC Lions? And Mr. Justin Medlock as well. Are you concerned? And if so, by how much? Also, the Winnipeg Jets and their line formations going into tomorrow night's game against Pittsburgh. Once again, at yesterday's practice, Kopp was centering Tanev and Mathias, and Hendricks was out there. We might see Matt Hendricks for the first time this year in between Armia and Lemieux. And, of course, the extra forwards were Patan and Dano Kulikov back in, it looks like, as well. He was paired with Tyler Myers. Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in. In the meantime, here's Paul Maurice on deciding who will play in the bottom six.
Balance, for one thing. We have some shooters in our top six. We need some guys that can kill penalties and then intensity and style of play. It's not an easy job sometimes to come off the bench in 6 to 8 to 10 minutes and be sharp and strong, but that's part of that job, so we need guys that can do that.
Just as a little fun reminder, two of the next three games will have the number 2 power play in the NHL up against the currently ranked number 30th penalty kill. Quite a test here for the boys.
And also along that line, here is Paul Maurice on if the opponents they are facing dictate to whom he dresses in the bottom six.
It's also the role that you need. Like, if we're going to have guys kill penalties, normally penalty killers look a certain way. But then how the group fits, right? How the line fits. Is there chemistry there with the other players? Can they feel free to score? That's there. It's usually a simpler game, pucks to the net and grind. But having skill in your bottom six is what we'd all shoot for. But we got to kill penalties, and we got guys that can win face-offs to do that, and guys that will get into shooting lanes.
How can you hope that you get some production from the bottom six? Something 5-on-5, anything 5-on-5, and go 10 of Kopp Mathias.
And well, you know what? Who else has done anything?
That's a fair point.
That's the issue I have. Like, fair enough. I'll listen to all the arguments on this, but as he literally said, of the 9 guys, and I'm including Lowry, who will not play, but of those 9 guys fighting for those 6 spots, as he literally said in a clip we ran earlier, feel free to score. Anybody.
What I would argue, though, is Paul Maurice is clearly putting a major, major emphasis on having penalty killers in the bottom six.
That is true.
How's that working?
How has it worked since he's done it?
Dead last. They're dead last in the NHL. So you're telling me you're going to sacrifice offense for penalty killing prowess. I'll buy that if they're top 10. I'll buy that if they're killing off penalties at a 85% clip, and then it's like, well, you know what? We're not giving up much 5-on-4. At least we can offset the lack of 5-on-5 production. But when you're getting absolutely nothing from everybody else in the bottom six, I just don't think it's a very sound strategy, and you got to change it up.
Sorry, and you're putting a guy out there in Benintendi in a 61 games played, 0.08 points per game. Like, you know, Tanev doesn't need to be in that third line to be out there wherever you want for the penalty kill. But if you and I don't have a Matthias, I know he's got chances and he's got some, you know, in his history as an NHLer, he can be productive. But to put Tanev out there with him, that's just, I don't understand what you're trying to extract there.
Also, are you or are you not excited for the Cobra Kai movie reuniting Ralph Macchio and William Zabka in the Karate Kid saga? Years later. 780-1290, who's first on the Boss Pizza fan line?
Let's go to Norm.
Norm, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good. Norm, how you been?
Hey, Troy. Very good. And you know what? Lately, I've been agreeing with Troy's points, probably about 90% of it, and he's winning you guys over on the favoritism right here.
Thank you, Norm.
Well, that's
right on, man.
This is obviously a fantastic call.
Obviously, we haven't heard from you in a while because you're not well. I hope you get better. Fair enough. Go ahead.
I think
Wicks
hung up on him.
Oh, no. Oh, now he's gone.
A bunch of crap right there. Holy smackers.
I mean, we don't approve offensive calls on the show, so that, yes. I mean, that's...
The language you used, Norm, was just atrocious. Oh, atrocious language used by you. Please clean it up and call back if you want to weigh in on what we're talking about here on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. One thing that was asked yesterday after practice as well is, of course, this is the first game between the Jets and the Pittsburgh Penguins since the bad blood over Stastitos hit on Toby Enstrom, which knocked him out. Andrew Kopp was a guy who stepped up. And the whole debate raged about why he was called up. And, of course, you know, this goes back to the game previous to that when the Winnipeg Jets, although lost in overtime in Pittsburgh, I thought played one of their better physical all-out games. And that was a game where, you know, both Wheeler and Scheifele got beat by Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, two of the best. It got heated. Mark Stewart took that hit. Dustin Byfuglien hit Schultz and knocked him out of the game. Like, it was a pretty good physical hockey game. And then the Sestito was called up for the next game, and that's when he hit Enstrom and knocked him out of the lineup. So here's Paul Maurice on if any of the bad blood from that hit will pour over into the first game since that hit between the Penguins and the Jets.
I don't think that Toby's going after anybody in the game, but those are physical games. I would expect they'll be kind of the same. There's an edge when both teams play. Our team looks different. They've added Reeves to their team on their bottom six. Yeah, but it'll still be a physical affair.
I say chakai on the whole physical thing a little bit because outside of Dustin Byfuglien, no one is going to want to tango with Mr. Reeves. And even I don't even think Buff wants to tango with Mr. Reeves. Reeves is a fighter. Buff isn't a fighter. He's not a fighter, right? But he's strong as the Dickens and all the rest of it, and he could maul Ryan Reeves. But, yeah, just chakai on the whole physical, like going out of your way to even things up.
I saw Dustin Byfuglien in the Western Hockey League absolutely tune a couple guys. Back in the day.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to fight
him. I've watched Byfuglien fight lately, and he's not, to me, not a natural scrapper, which is
like
why
he's not technical in the same way that a Ryan Reeves
heavyweight.
Like he's just, you know, he's more of a brawler. Like when it's a 5-on-5 number two
mauling.
Show, I'll take 33 over Ryan Reeves.
We'll get to the phone calls in just 1 second. Did you guys see the video of Ryan Reeves and Phil Kessel?
Yes.
And
how funny did Phil Kessel look?
Kessel
just
challenged
even.
Kessel challenged Reeves to some basketball, some one-on-one.
Just the way Kessel moves is funny.
The best part about that was when Reeves won and he did the Dave Chappelle game blouses. Yeah. That was hilarious.
I was surprised Phil Kessel could get off the ground. He's got a little. There's some guys with weird bodies,
real weird,
that just somehow excel at
defy
everything athletic.
Logic,
yeah,
yes.
Like Phil Kessel, the body, the face, everything.
Dude can hardly walk. He's all bow legged and stuff. Put skates on him, and he turns into a god.
He looked
crazy.
A little bit like Philip Seymour Hoffman in Long
yes,
Came Polly. Make it rain. Give me the rock. to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Thanks, Norm. Who's next?
Well, we got Norm to clean up his language. He's back here.
Norm, you're back. Thank you.
Yes. They're not very good today.
I was going to say Connor Hellebuck has been their best player so far this year. And why are they not recruiting Andrew Harris and Matt Nichols? And I'll hang up, guys.
Sorry, what was the last part about Harris and Nichols?
Why are they not resting him for the, playoffs?
Well, they might.
Thanks, Norm.
Now. They'd be a little bit more inclined to now, for sure. I think that the Andrew Harris, the 1,000 pursuit is a remarkable long shot now. I think he needs 180 yards receiving over the last two games to do that. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they were to rest them, but likely just, I think, the second half of the Calgary game, depending on whether or not they've sewn up a home playoff game or not. That's why they haven't. They still haven't sewed up home playoff game yet.
Yeah, you got to play that. You got to play everyone until you have that locked up. And look, hopefully you get up by 20 whatever points against BC, and you can rest Nichols and Harris in the fourth quarter as
Which
well.
Which ain't very likely when you look at what BC did defensively.
Yeah,
last
didn't
time.
Say it was likely, but hopefully that's the case. You rest them there. You play them like Troy said. A quarter, a half and a bit against Calgary, and then that's probably your best-case scenario in terms of getting these guys a little bit of rest at least.
And then even then, it's a lot on the players. Like, I agree with the whole rest thing, but I know Coach O'Shea isn't, and I know he relies on his players to see, okay, next week we have a home playoff day. What are you comfortable with? Do you mind sitting for a week and a half, or how much you want to play? And then that weighs into it too. So, but yeah, you can't rest them this weekend until you get that home playoff date, in my mind. Thanks for the call, Norm. 780-1290. We'll take more of your calls when we come back on The Big Show. Plenty of questions to answer, including, are you excited for the Cobra Kai follow-up to the Karate Kid, Macho Zabka, Johnny?
Just going to keep throwing that lure
versus
out there,
Danielson.
Huh?
I can't believe they're doing this. It's outstanding. Maybe years from now, there'll be a original Goon reunion when I'm 80, which is about 7 years away. We'll take a break and take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 next.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, and your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon live from the Royal Sports Studio here on Pembina Highway. Ben Bishop was pulled last night in a 4-3 loss to Colorado, I believe. And it was 3-0 when Lettinen was put in. Then it was 4-0. His quote today, there was no reason for me to come out. I guess that's the coach's decision. I'm not very happy with the decision.
Ken Hitchcock is rough on goalies, man. We know that. And I've wondered this basically since Hitchcock and Dallas and Bishop all were going to be intertwined there, just what effect it would have possibly on Bishop. And this will be something to watch going forward, boys.
Ken Hitchcock now will hear that comment and the next game pull him 6 minutes into the first period and then make him go back out and play the 12th minute of the first period.
And then he'll make the playoffs like he always does. I just don't think it's a big deal.
To the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Ken, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, Ken.
Hi there.
Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just had a comment about the Bombers, in particular Medlock.
Yep.
Troy, I'm a little surprised you didn't pick up on this, but are we all missing something that Medlock needs some help, like other than the Bombers getting first downs and getting closer to the goalpost? But can we not get him a punter, like someone to help him out? Like, yeah, I know he's in his 30s. He's kicked the record field goals last year. He was on pace this year to break that. And like that guy's leg's going to fall off at some point.
Well, you mean you literally think that his leg is weary?
Well, it's starting to show. It looks like he's petering out, eh? You know, he's not getting better as the season goes. He's getting worse.
So you'd like him to focus on field goals and for the team to get a punter and alleviate that from him?
Exactly, yeah. It's, you know, I can't believe that, you know, I've been saying this for a while now, and you know, to my inner circle, but I can't believe it. I you know, I'd have a punter on the first bus or plane into town and get that guy some help, concentrate on the field goals, get back to being the most accurate in CFL history, and let's get a cup.
The whole concentrated on the field goals thing, though, man. Like, it's not like he's lost leg strength. He still pounds his kickoffs, right? So it's not like his leg's not tired in that manner. And when I had the chance, I love doing both. And when you say, like, focus on the place kick, I don't think that's going to help him. What helps a lot for a lot of guys, love being on the field as often as you are in doing both field goal kicking and punting. It's just you're in the game so much more than just field goal kicking that I don't think his punting is going to hurt and has never hurt his field goal kicking. And the one thing is here, man, if he was open-minded or if he was asking for help, there's someone who lives in Winnipeg who knows a thing or two about punting, who punted for 23 years and is quite possibly the best professional punter in the game's history, or right up there with the very best, and Bob Cameron, who would go down there and talk to him a little if they were concerned about his punting. So I think Justin Medlock wants to do both jobs. I think most guys do enjoy doing both jobs. I don't think his punting hurts his place kicking. I think they're always completely separate. And his leg strength has not diminished whatsoever. So I don't think punting is doing anything to hurt Justin Medlock. And if he didn't want to do both, he would tell them that.
Man, if they took punting away from him,
he would hate that. I would, like, they are two total separate crafts and art forms, right? So they're not related whatsoever. If you struggle in one, it's not going to affect the other at all.
But isn't a bit of the reason he's punting is because of the salary, too?
Well, he came here as a guy doing both.
Yeah.
So I would think, I know for me, and I would think for him and all the, you, it sucks when you're place kicking and you're only on the field 3-4 times a game. When you're out there with punting and you're out there like more than double that, the flow of the game is so much easier and you're just so much more involved. It's real hard to explain. He would love doing both, I would suspect.
How concerned are you with this and Medlock going into the playoffs? Because we heard him speak yesterday. We from what I know of him and from the times I've interviewed him and talked to him, he's a guy that this isn't going to rest easy with. He's going to look for answers to get better in all this. But legitimately, like come playoff time, game on the line, or you need 4 field goals in a game to win, how concerned are you?
What I'm most concerned with and what I've seen in this run of 7-for-13 is specifically that game-winning attempt. The placement of the ball was off for sure. As a left-footed kicker on that hash, like it started off just inside that right upright, and it looked like either his own natural draw or the wind played a role in it missing. So if there was like into the wind from that upright, to me, you should be aiming basically at the left upright, not just inside the right. So he was way off on where his target was. And also the ball rotation was bad. So it was a miss hit on top of it all. That's what I'm most concerned with. Hey, you can miss a kick and hit it really well, and the wind messes with you, and that can cause you to miss sometimes. But his target was off. The ball rotation was off, so he didn't hit it very well. I'm most concerned with that. Right, and missing game winners affect you for sure. And he was a little bit wonky coming into that, so all that sort of stuff compounds itself, and we'll get a more of a clear indication as to where he's at shortly here on Saturday.
Thanks for the call, Ken. We appreciate that. 780-1290 in the Boss Pizza fan line. Who's next?
Terry.
Terry, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. Just a quick comment on Medlock. Let's just say things go south and Bombers don't beat BC, and so they miss the home playoff game, right? So financially, bottom line, just do the math. That's going to cost the club ballpark about $3.5 million in just revenue for that year. So that's got to weigh on the management going forward, whether to re-sign this guy. So that's a big ticket item, and I'm a little concerned. It just seems to be where, you know, this guy with money and, it's a little concerning. And so hopefully they can do it against BC because chances are if it's down in Cowtown, we'll be playing on the road and it might be versus Saskatchewan. God help us.
Well, here's the thing with the contract, Terry. Like, hindsight, I'm still signing that. I'm still bringing Justin Medlock in at that price, hindsight. Now, it's been a bad year for him, and the stats aren't very good, and maybe it won't go well this weekend. Maybe the rows continue, but, you know, hindsight, I still do that deal.
Yeah, I don't have a problem whatsoever with the deal, and you go and you have to go get if you want. You know, there were some struggles prior to his arrival in that position. You want to go get the who at that time was the most accurate kicker in CFL history, for Pete's sake, and played a massive role into what you accomplished last year as an organization. I have no buyer's remorse whatsoever there for Justin Medlock. And you go project forward to next year when he's 33 years old, and regardless of how he maybe finishes this season, you know, if he's sniffing near the bottom in both field goal percentage and punt average, you know, next year you readjust the contract as a free agent. And maybe get a guy like Justin Medlock for 120, like something more along the lines of what's average or normal in the CFL right now. So zero buyer's remorse.
Thanks for the call, Terry. More of your calls when we return to the Big Show on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 from the Royal Sports Studios here. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, and your phone calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290.
Tweet from North End Rick, the mayor of the North End. Everything was roses until Medlock attended the Westwood Kicker Camp and Day Spa. Hashtag just saying.
You have a day spa?
Hope you're proud of yourself, fella. Yeah, we dish out some, you know, eyebrow threads and the odd Brazilian here and there.
The lotion. Remember the lotion?
What does that mean?
Just
you go out, you know,
general statement. Yeah.
You lather up and you come back in and yeah. Smells kinda like
tickles your senses.
I guess. To the Boss Pizza Fan Line, Cobra Kai coming out soon. Danielson, 780-1290. Robert, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi. I don't know if I want to follow up after you guys talk.
Oh, please do. Please end this. Go move us on here.
Let's go to Matlock. My question is have you noticed the biggest change being that Dressler is in holding as opposed to Coates? I think that he's overcompensating because of the first few times Coates was holding the ball, he was missing, and so now he's overthinking the kick because Coates is holding the ball. They need to go back to Dressler.
Well, that would be completely up to Justin Medlock. He would be the one who would make that final decision. And I suggested yesterday that maybe the reason why he hasn't gone back to Dressler yet is just because of the in and out of Dressler in the lineup, so Medlock finds that to be too much or inconvenient in having to get used to another holder, and he must like what Coates does enough. Maybe this week he goes back to Dressler, though. But good point that you got.
But look, if you look at the stats between the difference of the two holding the ball for him, I mean, it's night and day. I'd say he's playing his own poor man's mental game, having Coates hold the ball, that if Dressler was down there pinning it, that he could get back into being that mechanic of being able just to ace everything.
Yeah, if he feels that's an issue, man, Medlock directs who's holding for him. So that would be totally on him if he wants to go back to Dressler.
Oh, that's my 20 cents on the question. You guys have fun.
Thanks, Robert. We appreciate the call. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Dean, you're on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Go ahead. Hi, Dean. Okay, try again. Dean, we'll move over to Al. Al, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Al.
Morning, fellas. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. One more. I agree with Troy on the Dressler Medlock thing. I think that Dressler is just getting back up to speed in practice. So they have no time to practice. But I can see him probably coming in by the Calgary game at the latest. And you know, kicking is just like a golf swing. Everything is just timing. And I noticed that his timing is just a little off with Coates rather than Dressler. So that'll be fixed. And one biggest fix that the Bombers can do as far as Medlock goes is not let the other team run up and down the field, and they have to come down to a game-winning field goal. They have that game in the bag on Saturday afternoon. They should have been taking a knee instead of Medlock having to kick another field goal. Like, it's all on Hall. Richie Hall is, you know, he's proven that bend-don't-break defense doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't know if I can say they had the game in the bag. For like when Toronto's got 572 yards to Winnipeg's 303, I thought Winnipeg was more than fortunate to be in a position to have a chance at a game-winning field goal.
I never felt like that game was in the bag, even when they were up.
No, heck no.
Thanks for the call, Al. It wasn't Coates with Medlock and Hamilton?
I don't know for sure. I don't know. But
I think he came from Hamilton. I thought he held there, but
I'm not sure.
It has nothing
to do with practice or anything, like a lack of time for dress or anything like that. If Justin Medlock wanted – if he wanted Wade Miller to come down from the posh office and start holding for him, that it would happen. Like whoever Justin Medlock would say, this is my holder, that would be their holder, end of story. O'Shea, everyone involved, no one – they just – you have the guy you want. Who is it that you want? That's the period, end of story.
Yeah, I agree. Brent, we'll go back to Boss Pete's fan lines. Sorry, thanks, Al. We appreciate the call. 780-1290. You can also text your thoughts to us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Back to the Boss Pete's fan line here on The Big Show. 780-1290. Brent, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to make a comment that I just noticed in the paper, and you guys have been talking about the, you know, the bottom six and not scoring any points. I just noticed that the worst of the bunch is Mathias at minus three. I mean, you have Tanev that in seven games, he's plus one. He's got one goal and hasn't given up anything when he's been on the ice. And some of the other guys, so the glass half full is, no, they're not getting points yet, but they're not giving up much either. You know, to be minus one or minus two after seven games, so... I'm pleased with that. And the other thing is, Troy was talking about Hendricks, like, being on the penalty kill and wondering, can't we do any better than that? I'm thinking, I'm not sure if you guys said we're 31st in penalty kill, like the absolute worst in the NHL. Is that
well,
correct?
After last night when Florida muscled their way into the 31st spot, the Jets were propelled up to 30th now.
Okay, so, I mean, if it's that bad, trying something new is got to be good. And what I see him doing, I mean, if we're down a man, we're in our own end, and he wins a faceoff, and one of our guys rattles it around the board and gives us 20 seconds, I mean, that's worth a lot. So, and that's his forte, apparently, is winning faceoffs. So I guess we'll have to see on that. And more on the half full. If you forget the first two games where, for some reason, the Jets pulled up in a clown car and all got off in skates, we're 4-1. We've beaten the teams that we should beat or could beat, and we got blown out the other game by Columbus. So, I don't know. It's I'm fairly pleased that, and then plus we've got that three-game winning streak at the very beginning of the season instead of going all. So unless you believe that the Jets are a really good team and therefore you're disappointed, I'm relatively pleased after last year as to how they're doing, like 4 out of 5. And if they can bring 2 points back out of the next three games, that will be what I expect. If they can get more than that, it's gravy.
Did you say
a couple of times against the Stanley Cup champions and Columbus?
You're saying 2 points out of the next three games?
I would like more. I really would, and I hope for more. But this is the Stanley Cup champions we're playing twice and a very good Columbus Blue Jackets team at home. Mm-hmm. And to be realistic, I mean, we finished so far out of a playoff spot at the end of March, we needed binoculars to see the team. I mean, that's who we are. And to think, to expect, not the hope, but to expect that we're going to play the Stanley Cup champions twice and Columbus at home and expect more than that. I don't know. You obviously think the Jets are a much better team than their record has said they are.
No, I think it's a fair point you're making. Just it's a little bit hard to accept off the top because you think, well, 2 points of a possible six, that's on the wrong side of where they'd like to settle, you know, if you can somehow manage three. But I think a fair sort of question or statement that you pose, and you know, is it reasonable or realistic to expect anything more than 2 points out of these next three games? It's a fair question.
The only problem I have with that is that That's what non-playoff teams do. Oh, we got three tough games coming up here. Well, we'll go 1-2. So if you think that's where the Jets are, then yeah, that's probably what you should expect. But eventually the Jets are going to have to beat some teams with good records and some teams with good players on them, right? Like you can't just continuously drop the games where you're facing a tough opponent because you're in the Central Division. There's going to be tough opponents basically every night.
What can you expect from this group, though, to the degree that they were dominated and punked on the ice against Columbus on Friday night? It's scary to think what might happen. Like, how much distance can you make up there against a team that just eviscerated you?
Well, and I agree with that game against Columbus, but don't you also agree they didn't play well? Like, they didn't play as good as we've seen them this year even? So wouldn't you expect a better effort than what you saw against Columbus? I do. I expect a much better effort than what – I give full credit to Columbus, but to me that game was two stories. One was just how good and deep and quick Columbus is, and the other one is the Winnipeg Jets did not bring their best effort.
I thought in the first period the Jets did a real solid job of keeping things to the outside for the most part. As much as Columbus dominated and how much time they spent in the Jets' defensive zone, I thought defensively the Jets played maybe about as well as they could as far as minimizing the damage that occurred. I thought that game specifically was much more about Columbus flexing on the Jets than it was about the Jets looking like a train wreck a la game one or two.
Of this next three games, I think they need a very good next three games for me would be 4 points. I think they need to get three. They need to get a win. They need to get an overtime something. And if they can get four, I think you're happy with that. Now, whether it's a win and two overtime whatevers or if it's two wins or whatever, if they can get four, I think that's pretty good. But they need to get 3 points. They need to get a win in these next three games, and they need to get another point somewhere.
4 points in the next three games to me would be borderline shocking. Look at where the bottom six is at right now, and you're going to go grab 4 points here, huh? Okay.
Well, yeah, but this is what we're talking about, though, Troy. We can sit here on paper and go, no. But to Brandon's point, like, if you are the team that's taking a next step going forward, you have to.
But that's, to me, that's sort of like to break down the upcoming games and pie in the sky or sprinkle pixie dust on this group here. And because a lot of people had hopes that they'd make the playoff, you can't just surface it that much, can you? You have to dig down and go, well, these are the reasons why they're going to have a hell of a time. Even getting 3 points would be fairly monumental. And this is why 2 points, like what Brent was it?
I was saying, right.
I think why that kind of – as much of a slap in the face it was to hear that, it's pretty much bang on. If they go get 4 points, that would be remarkable.
Thanks to Brent for the call. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line on the Big Show from the Royal Sports Studios here at TSN 1290. Who's next?
We'll get Kevin and John to hang on, but let's go to Russ.
Russ, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'd like to talk Bombers and more specifically Bomber defense and to the position of middle linebacker. Traditionally, your middle linebacker is your best athlete on the field, your top tackler. One of my concerns is that maybe I'm incorrect, but I believe Mike O'Shea was a starting middle linebacker in this league with the Toronto Argonauts for many years.
Yes, sir.
He obviously realizes the importance of that position. Unfortunately, our first-round draft pick middle linebacker is playing for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and I can only imagine the benefit we would have if we had Wamba playing back in the blue and gold, but that did not happen. So my question is, given all the things that Mike O'Shea knows by experience and the importance of that position, why is it that we have not yet looked at the option of bringing in an American linebacker, making some other moves? Because, I'll ask Troy this. Troy, you tell me in the 80s when we're winning our championships, how many times do you recall a Bomber defense giving up over 570 yards, in a championship run? Right now, going into the playoffs, and we haven't secured even our position, we're going to have a home game yet. I'm just, if you're a betting guy right now looking at all the teams that are going into the playoffs, you'd almost have to put the Bombers in sixth place based on their recent play. So I wonder if you guys could just comment on that itself, on the middle linebacker position, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks again.
Thanks, Russ.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that Mike O'Shea has a profound understanding of how important that spot is. That is the quarterback of the defense, and they did try and pass the torch here, right? In camp, they were had all kinds of guys auditioning at that middle linebacker spot, but from what we are led to believe, no one was able to pick it up to the degree necessary to take it away from Sam Hurrell. It was very late in camp when Sam Hurrell started to get that rotation back and was put back in that position. So they tried to hand it off to an American. I don't know the level of struggle. If I'm Kyle Walters here this offseason, there are 10 Americans, 10 stud Americans who are coming competing for that middle linebacker job, and that's the direction we're going. Unless we can pick up like that position specifically will be targeted and over sort of scouted to make sure that we find someone there. They tried to fill it with the guys that they got, couldn't do it, and then that whole loyalty thing. I don't know, you know, to the degree there's that. I said yesterday that old saying where your greatest weak can sometimes be your greatest weakness, or greatest strength can sometimes be your greatest weakness as well. And that loyalty thing with Mike O'Shea in Sam Hurrell here, we saw it from really the arrival of Mike O'Shea, where he's just kind of had this place or this attempt to try and get Sam Hurrell, and he must see something there, right? Like Sam Hurrell from a size standpoint is pretty much perfect and all the rest of it, the 6'2", 230, all those sorts of things, but he's just not translating that size or bringing that, not applying whatever skill set that Mike O'Shea sees in him to translate into success. So And at this point in time, it's too late to do anything about it. So it just sort of is what it is this year. They tried to change it earlier during training camp. They couldn't. And then I would suspect next year they will go out of their way in a profound way and manner to have a different guy at middle linebacker there.
Kevin and John, hold on the line. We'll get to you next and anybody else on the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line on the Big Show, TSN 1290 from the Royal Sports Studio with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls. Kevin, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, there was a player in Hamilton that got flagged for pushing a ref and then subsequently was cut. Would he ever be an option in case the Kevin Fogg experiment doesn't work? And are you surprised they haven't brought in another import running back with the status of Timmy Flatters up in near?
I believe, just so you know, I believe Darren Baumann was reporting yesterday that Flanders is very close to coming back. So if not this week, possibly next week, to answer that question. And I don't know about...
Yeah, Will Hill was his name.
He had aggressive he's a bit of a cancer, but
he was broken. Yeah, he was playing safety, I believe, for Hamilton. I believe he was. And I just, you know, that whole... You know, you said right there, a cancer and all the rest of it. Boy, Mike O'Shea and Kyle Walters together, and I agree with this in what they've done in a huge way in the locker room, they really seem to pick and choose the type of guys and the character that they're going to bring into that room.
Well, it's a shame because he can play.
Yeah, I just don't know if that's, like Troy said,
He's a safety too, right? So as I recall, anyway, with Hamilton, he was playing safety, so you can't make a transition to
a little bit in DB too. But he's been let go by a number of teams, and if you look at his personal history, he's got a long, long list of trouble. So I'm okay with taking gambles on guys, but this seems like one of those guys that's had his fair share of chances, and he's not going to figure it out now. 27 years old.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. John, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, John.
Oh, hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay. So, thanks for taking the call. I just had a little bit of Jet talk, and I'm not an expert, but I've kind of watched the team and what the boys have built here with Jets 2.0, and, you know, it's been a while coming along, but I think we've finally got some pretty good pieces to the puzzle. I don't know if it's a championship team, but we've got some solid pieces, and my comments and a couple of questions are that...
Sorry, you're cutting out, John. Can you keep going? Try. We'll get the questions in.
Okay. I just think that maybe we've got the team, but maybe not the coach. And it's too early to maybe cut Maurice loose. I like him. I think the players like him. I think he's a player's coach, and I think maybe that's the problem. And then we've got another issue and a question for you guys. I think we have a Buffalo conundrum, whether we like to admit it or not. There's people on both sides of the fence with Buff. I just don't see him fitting into any coach's long-term plans, and we could free up his salary.
So basically, sorry, John, you're cutting out again, but basically you're wondering if Maurice is too nice and if Bufflin fits into any plans here with the Jets.
Yeah, Maurice, you know, you have to be a player's coach and be flexible in the way you think and the way you present your thoughts and managing the egos involved and all the rest of it. But it's just not an accurate understanding of what Paul Maurice brings to the table as a coach to think that he's too easy or anything like that on these players. And I'll say this about Buff. In the first couple of games, he looked horrible out there and was all over the place, real wonky, wasn't playing sound in the defensive zone. But since coming back from the injury, he's looked pretty solid.
We got to take a break. Well, we're actually done. Moose Hockey coming up at 10:45 today on the Big Show with the pregame. And then, of course, Moose Hockey live from Chicago at 11 a.m. today. And then Hustler will have the Gondola Pizza warm-up. And he, Andrick Ralph, the afternoon ride with you this afternoon.
Real quick, third
line.
Yeah,
you got to be quick.
How about this? Third line for Pittsburgh. Carl Hagelin, Riley Sheehan, Patrick Hornquist versus Tanev, Kopp, and Matthias.
Bring it on.
Think about that for a sec.
Let's see it. Bring it on. I dare them. On behalf of Troy Westwood and Brandon Rewicki and myself, Jim Choth, we appreciate you listening. We'll be back tomorrow to tee up a game day. Finally, a game day as the Jets will be in Pittsburgh to take on the Penguins tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Choth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.